I gotta make sure my shit's off. I don't want to be that guy. The Joe Rogan Experience podcast is brought to you by the Fleshlight. But you already know this. I've said this 1,000 times.
I've been using my Fleshlight actually for real for the last couple like week or so. A lot. Really? Yeah. I got some nice.
By yourself or?
No. Yeah, by myself. But I got that massage, that icy massage stuff for your back.
That makes it hot.
Yeah, that makes your. It feels like no, it makes it cool, like tingly. I've been using that.
What? Like as Fleshlight. Lube?
Yeah,
that's the stuff. Like that's like Tiger Balm or something. Is that what you mean?
Yeah, it's the one that you just buy at like the grocery store.
Is it lube?
No. It's like massage oil. For but the cold one on my dick, and it doesn't seem like you should do that. I've used the hot one before while having sex, and it destroyed the girl's vagina, and it was the worst night ever. But the cool one you can get away
what
with.
What happened? What happened?
I always thought for some reason. And like massage oil and all that, you could just put in the vagina. You know, like it just never really occurred to me.
You say the vagina like it's a cabinet. Like a vagina is just some shit. You some area you could put things.
Yeah,
that's so, like human tissue that absorbs like toxins and chemicals.
I know that now. Because so she screamed, and it ruined her whole night. It got inflamed. She was just. God. It went from like hot, sexy time to fucking bitch ass time. But
ouch.
But the cold one you can kind of get away with. Like I've used the cold one on a girl before, and I just didn't tell her.
What? Why would you do that?
Because I didn't know. This was back when I didn't know, and I thought it was just lotion, and I used it, and she never said anything bad. It was the hot one that got me in trouble.
But when you used it, like, what was the purpose of what were you doing?
For lube.
She wasn't enjoying
like
this?
In the ass and everything.
Oh, hey. I think that's even worse, dude.
Yeah.
I think probably your pussy is a little more durable than inside your asshole.
Well, you also used to always go ass to pussy to ass, never thought anything about it.
What did you do that for?
Because I never
know anything about poop?
It. Now that I've dated some porn stars, I know everything possible. Wait, I didn't know that with the Ohio girls. They don't know that
shit
either.
So they just fucking get infected and die? Yeah. Like, what happens? You could die from that, dude. You're sticking poop
inside your body. Oh, I know that now. That's fucking wrong. They should train those Ohio Midwest people about this stuff.
Somebody should at least bring it up. Yeah. It should be something you talk about. Yeah, because it's like, think about that. The vagina is right next to the asshole.
Right.
And you're barely telling them about putting in the vagina. Like, does putting in the asshole ever even come up? But yet, in real life, it comes up all the time.
Exactly.
It's fucking, that's school for you.
That's birds and bees.
That's horse shit. Well, I'm glad you never killed anybody with your poop vagina antics.
I feel bad.
No, you should feel bad.
That's why I don't feel bad using the cold lube on my Fleshlight.
So, this cold lube, would you recommend this? I mean, is this safe? Is your dick going to fall off if you keep using
it? It's probably not safe, but it feels really, really good when your dick's like on ice, but it's throbbing.
You're a strange lad. You're a strange lad.
And it numbs the Fleshlight even more.
Don't do it. Listen, do not. This is nothing we endorse. I don't know what adverse effects that's going to have on your dick, you silly bitch.
You're right.
For ladies and gentlemen, the regular folks out there only use like actual real sexual lubrication.
Flesh lube.
Flesh lube is something that the Fleshlight sells. Fantastic stuff. No need to deviate.
Yeah, and you know, honestly, now that I'm thinking about it, I think you're only supposed to use water-based lubes in your Fleshlight because they will like destroy them. So I probably am fucking up my bitch pretty bad.
Oh,
right
what
now.
Are you doing then, man?
I'm destroying my Fleshlight.
Don't do that. I got an extra one if you do, but don't do it.
Shit.
It's a worthwhile thing. You can keep one for years.
I know, but this is the Jenna Hayes special edition one.
It's not as
destroying Jenna Hayes' butthole.
Ugh, does it have her little signature on it?
As if
she would ever have her signature on her butthole. That doesn't even fucking make sense.
I like to think it's just herpes.
Why would you sign that? You like to think it's just herpes? Imagine if your herpes was like a signature. Like so you know exactly who gave it to you.
Jenna Hayes gave me this.
You get fucking Joey Diaz herpes. It's right here on your ass. What does the Ari Shaffir herpes?
They should make Death Squad Fleshlights.
They would, I'm sure.
For gay guys.
Oh, you're disgusting. You mean like we should pose?
No, we just mold our buttholes.
Yeah, but that's what I'm saying. You have to pose for that. They have to model your asshole.
Wow.
Would you be down with that?
If we got a percentage of the Fleshlight, those girls make good money. They do. They make great money.
So you're more than willing to let a rubber version of your asshole be distributed all
Fuck
over the world?
Yeah, why not?
Yours because you're silly. That's why. Because what if some dude just gets really into the idea of fucking you in the ass? Because he's been practicing on your Fleshlight and he dresses up like you and he's got your fucking t-shirt on right now. And if he had your little butthole Fleshlight, that would like come so close to completing the deal.
That's all he needs.
No, all he needs is roof and all and some duct tape and he's going to fuck you on
and
video.
Handkerchief.
Yeah, I don't think you should be like sending people the wrong message. And the wrong message clearly is you can fuck my fake ass.
Olive Garden butthole.
Exactly. Anyway, go to joerogan.net, click on the link for the Fleshlight, enter in the code name Rogan, and save yourself 15% off. And don't do any of the things that Brian said to do. Thanks to Onnit.com, O-N-N-I-T, makers of Alpha Brain, Shroom Tech Sport, Shroom Tech Immune, and New Mood. What are these things? Easiest to describe it is just to go to Onnit.com, O-N-N-I-T. They're all nootropics, and what nootropics are is vitamins that enhance your cognitive function. They enhance your brain's ability to produce neurotransmitters. It gives you all the building blocks for thought. It's nutrients for your mind. Very controversial subject. If you're interested in it all, I endorse it 100% wholeheartedly, believe in it. I know it works. I use them, and I've used them before I was ever involved with Onnit. I used them when I used the Bill Romanowski stuff, who I'm going back and forth with his publicist. So he wants to be on the podcast. So he's going to come on. He's going to talk to us about his stuff, which is called Neuro One, which is how I got introduced to the to the world of nootropics. It's very interesting stuff, and Romanowski's got a very interesting story. He was he had multiple concussions from his football career, and that's when he got into these nootropics. Anyway, go to Onnit.com, check out all the information, and if you're interested, Alpha Brain is something I wholeheartedly endorse. We also offer 100% money-back guarantee on the first 30 pills. If you buy it, you try it, you don't like it, you go, I want my money back, you don't even have to return it. It's 100% money-back guarantee. We are more concerned with making sure nobody feels ripped off than we are with making money, and that's a fact. So, use the code name Rogan, save yourself 10% off any and all orders. Strap in, bitches. World traveler Shane Smith is here.
Joe Rogan Podcast, check it out.
The Joe Rogan Experience.
Train by day, Joe Rogan Podcast by night, all day.
My man got here, saw the whiskey on the table, right away, cracked it open. We're not even looking at 2 p.m. and he was down.
I have to drink off my Vegas.
Is that what it is?
Dude.
How bad was it for you?
It's a bad time.
Where'd you guys go? You went to the fights.
We went to the fights. It was awesome. And then that night we went out to... we had 10 vice guys there. And 3 of them, I got calls the next day because the limos had their wallets in them. 3 separate guys. 3 separate cars. They lost their wallet.
Wow. Pickpocket dudes must thrive on that when they see those stumbling guys on Monday morning that are barely together, so wrecked from the weekend.
Well, the car drivers were nice. They were like, hey, you know, I'll come around, bring it back, because why, you know.
Right. They'd be happy, and they're going to get a tip anyway.
Yeah.
The Vice videos that you guys did for Dan Hardy were fucking awesome, man.
Yeah, that's really good stuff, man.
Yeah. It's really creatively shot. It's intriguing. The music was good. The choices of when to put music and when to put, you know, when to put no sound. It was really interesting, man. I thought it was great. You know, the whole scene where he's driving, you know, I was like, this is fucking cool. I love Dan Hardy.
He's awesome.
He's quite a personality. You know, it was really, I love the other guy too, Dwayne Ludwig, his opponent. So it was hard to watch one guy lose and one guy win. It always is, but it's nice to see Dan Hardy successful again. I love a story like that, man. I love when a guy takes like this Jamie Varner kid that fought this weekend. Yeah. Did you see that?
Yeah.
He went to some small shows, lost all his motivation. Started getting beat by guys that should never beat him.
Right.
And then all of a sudden, he just, for whatever reason, we'll have to figure it out when you talk to him, decided to get his shit together again and just train like a fucking madman. Mm. They give him another shot in the UFC, and he just goes and knocks out Edson Barboza, who's like one of the top 10 killers at 155 pounds in the world. The last time Barboza was in the ring was in Brazil, where he fucking wheel kicked Terry Edom in the head and knocked him unconscious. I mean, he's a dangerous, dangerous dude.
Right.
And Jamie Varner fucked him up, man. It was crazy. I love a story like that. Yeah. I love a dude who just gets it together.
There you go.
You know, it's like one of my favorite things in life. I love a guy who can keep it together, but man, I love a dude who loses it and gets it back. You know, that's fascinating to me.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of a boxer that lost it and got it back.
Not very many.
Because the Cinderella story is that, you know, they had the boxing film recently about the old guy. Oh, that's pretty good. The old time guy, like, who had to fix his arm, but, you know, picking up the crates. Who's that guy?
Which guy was that?
Ah, fuck now.
How long ago was this movie?
Like 10, in the last 10 years. It's
is that Russell Crowe?
Crow? Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Braddock.
Yeah, Braddock.
James Braddock, yeah.
You got to ship together.
I didn't see that.
No.
I saw like a clip of it, and it looked so hokey Hollywood.
Hokey.
I was like, get the fuck out of here.
It was hokey.
I hate when a guy who's that good, like Russell Crowe, gets stuck in a movie like that. Like, right. you're using like one of the best actors ever. And you got him in this goofy-ass movie, this fucking fake-ass boxing movie when guys throw fake-ass-looking punches, you know? There's not a whole lot of guys have ever pulled off, like, a real good fight scene in a movie.
Right.
It's hard. It's hard to fake that shit. That's the beauty of watching it in real life. It's,
yeah.
Like, it's so crazy. It's, if you've never seen it before, folks, you owe it to yourself for once in your life, if you're a UFC fan, to get tickets. And go to see a live event if it comes anywhere near you, because it's fucking crazy.
Yeah, it's awesome.
When you're right there too, I mean, I've been like inches away from some of the craziest moments in combat history, right. Combat sports history.
And the best seats, believe it or not, are not floor. It's about halfway up where you're almost just a little bit over the top of the covering.
You're right. The best seats are not the most expensive ones.
Yeah.
The above angles are great angle. Especially like that first riser, I think
First riser. Yeah.
So what happened? You just kept going? You just kept going all through Friday, all through Saturday, all through Sunday?
Yeah. I came straight here.
Damn, dude. Yeah. Any sleep?
In the limos, you know, we would pass out and then sort of keep going. But yeah, a little bit of sleep.
Nothing. Dude.
I'm old now, so I can't.
You're a fucking savage. You're still out there going wheels off, man. You still go wheels off the tracks into the woods. You still do it, huh?
Yeah.
It's fun, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's I wish that alcohol didn't have such a penalty, such a steep penalty on your body.
Yeah.
I love getting drunk.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, I'm really responsible about it. I try not to do it, you know, to the point of excess I don't ever drive. But I do like getting fucked up. That's why I like doing shots like in Vegas after a show. It's like, let's just get fucked up. You know, or when last time Eddie and Tom Segura and I got fucked up in Australia, we're like, we're in Australia. I got no responsibilities here. Let's get fucking blasted.
Right.
You know? But damn, the price is just ruthless on your body.
I'm pretty drunk still. It's kind of drunk driving here.
What? For real?
Because I woke up and went straight here, so I feel like I felt like I was still pretty fucked up from last night.
You really think that you could have got pulled over and arrested?
Probably not. I probably would be fine, but it felt like I was buzzed still from last night.
Damn, dude. You're going wheels off, too. Both of you motherfuckers putting me to shame.
I'm not putting you to shame on anything, dude. You just, I don't know what I'm allowed to say on the air. Or not,
you can say anything about whiskey. Don't say too much. Don't get crazy. What are you going to say?
I was going to say, you gave me something before.
Jack Daniels.
The walls have ears, sir!
Jack Daniels honey is my new thing.
It's delicious.
Doing shots of that is my new thing.
It's delicious for poison. As far as poison goes, it's the best stuff. What's your poison, man?
Well, I love whiskey, but, you know, I like shitty Irish whiskey, like Bushmills. And
really? That's the kind of stuff you like?
Yeah. You know, the more expensive scotch is, it more tastes like Scots socks. I like to just drink all shitty whiskey.
Really? That's interesting. Is that common?
I don't know.
Because I thought, like, the smooth stuff was the stuff that was, like, really old and super expensive, like single
malt. No, it's
really
smoky. That's really smoky stuff. I like peat, which is Irish whiskey. It tastes like peat. They boil it over peat bog.
The only time I've ever had really good whiskey is there was a guy named Josh Lieb. He was one of the writers on News Radio.
Right.
Very funny guy. Very nice guy. And he was just a real interesting character. And he was into, like, really old whiskey. And I was like, how much does that cost? And he was like, it was like something insane, like $100 a glass or something like that. I'm like, what? Really? And I'm like, what the fuck does it taste like? And he let me try some of it. Because he was like, wow, that is a kind of a strange thing to have created. It's a very very distinct sort of taste. But I wouldn't say it's good. Right?
Yeah, no.
None of it's good.
No. Just cheap whiskey's good.
The feeling of it is good.
Yeah.
So where are you coming back from, man? What's the latest world travels?
Well, we've been shooting a lot. So we shot January and February in Afghanistan.
Whoa.
Which was seriously heavy because we did a story on child suicide bombers. And so we got incredible access to kids who actually were caught before they could ignite their vests. And then we met the senior Taliban guy in Kabul, who is supposed to be in Pakistan, but we actually interviewed him in Kabul, and everyone's freaking out about that because they didn't know he was in Kabul.
So you sat down with this guy?
Yeah, yeah.
Whoa. What was that like?
They don't have a good outfit for sort of looking benevolent. Like, they look like, he looked like the devil. He looked really bad and evil. And I asked him about child suicide bombing, because they're using younger and younger kids now because they get past the checkpoints. And he said, yeah. You know, they actually admitted on air that they were using children as suicide, as transportation devices for dynamite.
Wow. You mean that's the best way to describe it? Transportation devices for dynamite.
Mm-hmm.
They've essentially said, you know, not only are we willing to kill our own, we'll kill innocent. Mm-hmm. We'll kill children to further our agenda. That's scary shit. That's fucking scary shit, man. What was it like talking to that guy?
Well, it was, you know, so he was arrested for kidnapping Westerners and UN people. And he had been in prison and somehow gotten out in Pakistan. So the Pakistanis let him out. And then he had snuck back into Kabul. So you're meeting a guy who's been arrested many times for kidnapping Westerners for political means. So that's weird. Two is, you go out and he's surrounded by his Talib soldiers. So he's got, like, you know, 20 or 30 guys in the courtyard, all sort of, you know, checking you out. And then if you say anything wrong or do anything wrong, then, you know, they'll just take you away. They don't give a shit.
Right.
So it was a bit nerve-wracking. And he's a seriously bad dude. I mean, he was a commander in the Mujahideen, and then he became Taliban, and then was one of the senior commanders when they were in control of all of Afghanistan, and then had to flee to Pakistan, and now is back.
Do they know who let him out and why?
Well, the Pakistani government has been sponsoring Taliban almost since inception.
Isn't that incredible that, like, they can get people into jail over there and then they can just sort of let them out? Like,
sure.
Really bad guys that people have tried so hard to capture.
Mm-hmm.
They're resisting this whole idea.
Well, it's also 100% corrupt. I mean, you can buy your way out of jail in Pakistan, buy your way out of jail in Afghanistan, but if you're on the right side of the ISI in Pakistan, which the Taliban are, then you can do whatever you want. Well, the ISI were the ones protecting bin Laden.
So how does something like this, I mean, whatever you can say about it, how does something like this get arranged?
Well, in Afghanistan, we're lucky because it was a guy named Saad Mashini who runs Tolo News, which is the sort of main news, you know, pro-Western, say, news in Afghanistan. And so he, you know, had a lot of, he can get you sort of see anybody in Afghanistan. And so he got us in to talk to the suicide bombers, the kids, and he got us in to talk to the secret police about that, and he got us in to talk to the Taliban.
So you set up this meeting with this guy. Mm-hmm. How long is the entire meeting?
Maybe an hour.
So how long have you been in his presence? The whole time you're in his presence,
yeah,
just
like
an hour?
An hour, just straight in, start, get out.
How do you get out of that kind of conversation? That seems like a conversation that should take 100 years.
Huh.
Do you have to tiptoe when you're discussing things? Are you biting your tongue?
I had to ask him a lot of unpleasant questions.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, how did you do that?
Well, you know, for example, I'd say, you know, you were a Mujahideen general. You know what it's like to lead troops. You know, these, you know, people trained to fight. How do you feel about sending, you know, six-year-olds, you know, to be transportation devices for bombs? And so you couch it in such a way that, like, you're a general. Because generally a lot of the Taliban fighters themselves, you know, don't condone the suicide bombing, but he did. He said, well, he wouldn't answer it. He said, there's a Pashtun saying, there's a tiger above me and a river below me, i.e., like, I'm screwed if I do and screwed if I don't. So he wouldn't talk to us about it.
Wow.
Yeah.
How often are they having suicide bombs go off over there?
About 200 times a year. So nearly every day there's a suicide bomb, and they're getting more and more effective. And they just had the first civilian suicide bomb, so, you know, not military targets, and it was a complete disaster. They actually had 7 suicide bombers. Not a lot of people maybe know this in America, but there was a empty building across the way from the American embassy, and they had these 7 suicide attackers actually dressed in burqas with their weapons under the burqas take over the building, and they held the American embassy hostage with like a full-on firefight in the middle of Kabul for over 24 hours before they could kill these 7 dudes. It was crazy. We have footage of it all, and it's totally fucking insane.
Holy shit.
Yeah. But what the Taliban guy says, and which is pretty interesting, is that they use suicide attackers and suicide bombers because that's what's going to get America out. And you go, well, you know, fuck you. But in reality, that's true. Because what happened is America went in to get al-Qaeda and the Taliban out of Afghanistan. And now our government is negotiating with the Taliban to see exactly how much power they'll have when we leave. So you're like, okay, well.
Jesus Christ. What a clusterfuck.
Yeah.
None of this is being reported in the mainstream news. It's certainly not being talked about like that. You see Karzai sits down with Obama, and they all seem to be playing nice with each other.
Yeah.
And this is all what's going on behind the scenes.
It's been reported. Constant suicide bombing. It's been reported that they've started to negotiate with the Taliban. And I was surprised that there hasn't been sort of more outrage, because people, I guess, are so sick of the war. They're just like, well, fine. You know, they're negotiating with them. But
so
the whole reason,
is negotiating? The United States is?
Yeah. Well, and the NATO, yeah.
And what are they're negotiating?
And the UN. Power. When the Americans leave, how much power they'll have, how they're going to share power, et cetera, et cetera.
Wow.
Yeah.
Isn't that the whole purpose of this, is try to stop those guys?
Yes.
And then they're negotiating with them about how much power they get.
Yes.
So what does that mean? That means we lost the war? Are Americans ever going to say we lost a war? We're like that dude. You could beat our dick into the dirt for 100 years. And we're like, that wasn't even a war. It was a conflict.
It was a police action.
We will never admit that. We don't even admit we lost Vietnam. Right. You know, we pulled out of Vietnam. It's like, whatever. We got tired of kicking your ass.
Sure,
this is a weird country, man.
Yeah. You know, Afghanistan, they for sure 100% lost Afghanistan. I mean, what did you do?
What happened?
You went in to try to get the Taliban out. Now you're negotiating to give them power back. 10 years, all that money, all those lives lost. And for what? What's the end result? Because actually, when you're there, you realize, the minute the Americans leave, there'll be a civil war. So it's going to be back in the exact situation of a civil war with a massive Taliban presence in Afghanistan. So 12 years down the drain.
My God, what a mess. How horrible must it feel to the families of people who lost children over there?
Exactly.
And then you just realize this whole thing was a clusterfuck. Yeah. The thing that gets me is just, how does anybody look at Vietnam and not learn? How do we not learn? It's like, this is the same shit.
Yeah.
It's the exact same shit. Mm-hmm. We get manipulated into these wars by special interests.
Mm-hmm.
And this is exactly what it is, folks. And you've been tricked into thinking that this was some fucking, some justice mission. You know?
Exactly.
It's madness.
Yeah.
What do you think they're over there for? What's the number one resource they're trying to grab over there?
Who?
The United States.
Well, I think they got into a war.
I shouldn't say the United States. What I should say is the corporations that are trying to...
Well, I think that...
profit from this.
I think they had to go in because they couldn't just go into Iraq. Iraq was about oil. They couldn't just go into Iraq. They had to say, well, we have to go get the guys who did this for 9/11. And then they went in. But they could have gone in with a surgical team, got the guys, and got out. I mean, you don't have to take over the whole country.
Right. Why do you think that they had to say we're going to go into Afghanistan as well? Like, why?
Well, because Iraq was a complete construct. They made it all up. That's 100%. They're like, they're trying to tie Iraq with 9/11. And you're like, well, this had nothing to do with it.
Iraq 100% to do with oil.
With oil. Well, because they manufactured why we went there. The 9/11 was like, yes, they already had plans to go in there before, but 9/11 would say, yes, you know, we're going to go in there after Al-Qaeda. But they knew that they had to actually go to the place where it was. They had to do the true thing so that they could get what they wanted, which was Iraq.
Oh, so you feel like Afghanistan was almost like a secondary operation?
100%, yeah.
Whoa.
And then it became the primary operation because it was such a clusterfuck.
Well, what about all the resources that they keep finding over there? Like, they just found trillions of dollars in minerals. Do you think that plays a part in the idea to occupy it as well?
Maybe. I mean, I think that now what's happening is Chinese companies are coming in as they do because they're sort of not blame-free, but they're sort of like, oh, we have been conflicted by this conflict. So they come,
right.
Much like they've done in Africa, you know, wherever America sort of, you know, piss people off or done bad things, and China just comes in and says, oh, we'll trade with you. You know,
that's got to be a trip, man.
Well, because America goes and sees things, and, you know, for better or for worse, let's try to fix it, and then there's
right.
problems, and then they put sanctions on people. And China just says, I don't give a shit what you do.
Wow.
Well, you can do whatever you want to do. Just give me your tritium or whatever it is.
Wow. China just rocks it Game of Thrones style.
Yeah.
They go old school empire ways. We don't impose any. We got our own fucking problems. Mm. We got a billion people living on one patch of dirt.
Exactly.
Wow. Yeah. They're always going to beat Americans with that attitude.
Yeah.
You know, as far as like business goes and getting into creepy places.
Right.
They'll just sneak right in. So they're in Afghanistan, you think, trying to get these minerals?
Yeah, well, for sure. Chinese companies are in there. I mean, there's a lot of companies in there. But the problem is going to be stability, because the minute Americans pull out, it's going to be full-on civil war. So you can't really go and get minerals when people are shooting rockets at you.
Now, knowing what a clusterfuck it is, knowing how crazy it is, what is it like being over there, you as a person, as an outsider, a Canadian, in fact, uh-huh. out there watching this fucking chaos and filming it? What was that like for you?
You know, I got on the plane to come home, and I was on my iPod.
I need a fucking drink now.
I was on my iPod or the iPad, and, you know, I was... There was a plane, you know, that was like soaring through the air, and you can see space and all this stuff. And because when you're in Afghanistan, it sort of feels like 5,000 years ago, because everything's sort of, you know, these sort of mud huts, and it's sunbaked, and it looks like it hasn't, a lot of it looks like it hasn't changed in 5,000 years. So you're really sort of, wow, this is modernity. You know, this is the modern age. This is the 21st century. Because we have all these crazy things that you can sort of tweet from Afghanistan or whatever, technology. But then at the same time, you have this sort of devolution, you know, where we're sending kids to blow our shit up, you know, because it's effective, you know. And so there's been a lot of what I've seen this past year of shooting, which is, it feels like half of humanity is just going completely backwards. You know.
Now, seeing that and then flying back into New York City, what the fuck does that contrast feel like? You take these mad trips, and then when you come home and you see like what's possible at the apex of civilization right now, as far as like, you know, cities and a place where you can go safely, and a place that doesn't have, you know, guns and bombs blowing up constantly. I mean, no wonder why that's where the terrorist attacks occurred. No wonder why that's where the September 11th attacks occurred, right?
For sure. I mean, it was, you know, incredibly successful. You know, when you fly in, you still see that the Twin Towers aren't there. And actually, we start our piece with that, because we say, actually, the most successful suicide bombing of all time was 9/11, suicide attack, because it started the Iraq war. It started Afghanistan, you know, both of which are still going on. And, you know, completely polarized the world. And it actually, suicide attacks were, and when we did the research, it was a few months ago, and I've had a few ales, so don't, you know, quote me on the exact percentages, but the percentages are insane. It was like suicide attacks were 3-5% of all terrorism before 9/11. And now they're like 97% of all.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah, because it's so successful.
What is it like as a sane, rational person traveling around to the most fucked up places on Earth and seeing humanity at its worst? What the fuck does that feel like?
That's a hard question.
But you're such a nice guy. You're such a jovial guy. Every time I see you, you're smiling and hugging people. You seem like such a warm and friendly person. For you to get thrust constantly into these horrific situations where you get to see people just handed the shittiest fucking hand of cards in the history of life. Like, here you are, 2012, the internet's here, the fucking, you know, the age of information is here, but you're involved in some sort of crazy religious war, and people are blowing themselves up when they're six.
Yeah.
You're in the worst spot.
Yeah, well, I mean, the reason why I'm happy is because you're thankful for what you have when you see what, you know, everybody else doesn't have.
Were you happy before you did all this?
Yeah, I'm a pretty happy guy.
So it just enhanced your happiness to see how fortunate you are and your circumstances.
Yeah.
Fuck, man. That's a serious trip to be spending a large percentage of your time on this earth seeing the terrible spots. Most people are like trying to fly into Hawaii for the weekend and chill. And you know what I mean? You're spending, your job is to go to some of the scariest parts on earth.
Yeah, it doesn't seem that freaky at the time because you want to get the story and like, yes, we got into, you know, Somalia. We're going to hang out with the pirates. And you're like, yes, we've been working on that for a while.
Did you guys go to the Somalia and hang out with the pirates?
Yeah.
Oh my God.
And then you get in there and you're like, you're nervous and you know, fuck. You know.
You didn't think they would kidnap you?
Well, we paid them to kidnap us because you pay the kidnapping fee.
So how much is the kidnapping fee?
$15,000. So you pay them what they would charge for a kidnapping, but not to kidnap you.
Whoa.
Yeah. Which is fine. I mean, it's like just saying, well, you know.
$15,000 seems pretty reasonable. If that's all it is?
Yeah.
But isn't it more for other people if they catch like some billionaire people?
We did a bunch of shooting. We shot a lot in Kenya sort of, you know, refugees, and you know, we shot around Puntland, and now we're shooting Mogadishu to round it up. But it depends on the ship. But anyway, so when you're there, all you're thinking about is, you know, we got to get the shot, or we got to get this, or we got to get that. And it's only when you come back and you're sort of having dinner somewhere, and they're like, "Where were you?" "Oh, I was with the pirates in Mogadishu."
Jesus Christ!
But you don't really think about it so much at the time.
When a lot of people are horrified about the Somali pirates, and they're like, "This is a terrible situation." But what they don't understand is that those people really got fucked into that situation where they had almost no choice. Yeah. The Somali pirates started out when these Somalia soldiers would go after people who were dumping toxic waste off their shores.
Yeah.
It was killing all their fish and poisoning their people. And they're a fisherman's culture. I mean, could you imagine you're a culture of fishermen? And, you know, they don't have a history of going after people and kidnapping people. They're just trying to fucking make a living, and all of a sudden some assholes are, you know, driving around in their boats, floating around a couple miles out, just dumping horrible shit into their ocean. And it's fucking up the whole ocean, and they get to see it right before their eyes. Yeah. They're the Mother Earth becoming, you know, poisoned.
Yeah.
The fish poisoning and people getting poisoned and sick. Yeah. So they started kidnapping them. They started kidnapping those people and demanding ransom from these companies that had poisoned their water. And then they started saying, you know what, fuck it. Let's just kidnap anybody who drives by. That's what we do now.
Sure.
And that's what it became. You know, those asshole corporations that were dumping their shit off the Somalia coast, they made monsters.
Yeah.
You know, those people should be fucking held responsible for a cleanup just as much as they should be responsible for a toxic cleanup.
Yeah.
They should be responsible for a cultural cleanup. You know, if they could actually find out who dumped all that shit and all the different corporations involved, it's probably a whole lot of them.
Mm-hmm.
And they could probably get a fuckload of money out of it if the world had any sort of a real court, you know?
Well, the problem is a lot of it was radioactive waste.
Ugh.
So it irradiated the sea and irradiated the beaches. And before that, the Chinese, Japanese, Portuguese, and Spanish fishing companies completely overfished it and then irradiated it, so they were totally fucked. There's actually a great movie called Fishing Without Nets, which is about that, about like they were all fishermen and now there's no fish, so they just take the same boat out and then they go.
Wow.
We're working on a story there right now about the American government is financing sort of Islamist extremists, you know, to fight Al-Shabaab, who are, you know, the bad boys over there. And so we're trying to figure out if that's true.
So the story is that American government is funding Muslim extremists who are going to fight these bad guys in Africa.
Exactly the same as what happened in Afghanistan.
Where the Mujahideen against the Soviet Union.
And then they became the Taliban. Yeah.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
We just don't ever learn. How does one fix this mess that we're in? How does one put the world on its back, you know, straight on its axle or on its axis? Or does that ever happen? Does it's just the way people roll? We just fucking constantly involved in chaos and love at the same time?
A lot of people meddle in other people's stuff, and then we have to go in, we have to save them, and you're like, you know, we have to save them from who? Themselves, you know, like, oh, you know, Saddam was such a bad guy, as opposed to who? You know, as opposed to, like, Charles Taylor, like, you know, so there's a lot of geopolitics and, you know, sort of geopolitical, you know, gamesmanship has been, you know, the result, the cause of a lot of these problems. But now it's 99% always economics. It's, oh, if you look at, you know, we have resource-based wealth, or, you know, there are one in every three countries with resource-based wealth has a civil war every 4 years, whereas, you know, the remaining countries, you know, don't have any civil wars or haven't had a civil war for 100 years. The percentages are insane. So now, like Afghanistan, you were just saying, but a lot of the African countries now, they're like, oh, you know, rare earth metals that didn't used to be worth money are now in, you know, every cell phone. So that, you know, the war in the Congo is now the 10th bloodiest war in history, and it's all because of coltan, which is needed to make iPads and iPhones.
It's so ironic that at the height of technology, the iPad 3, front-facing camera, HD screen, if you follow that all the way down, yeah, there's an Congo. African boy that's picking out this mineral out of a hole in the earth.
Yeah.
I mean, it's really, that spectrum is quite fascinating. I mean, it's almost from, I mean, that spectrum goes back to just the invention of tools and, you know, figuring out iron and shit, and pulling stuff out of the earth, all the way to the height of technology. We're weird, man. We are fucking strange. Human beings are so bizarre. How much do you look at life? I mean, your experiences are far more extreme than mine and most people on this planet, I think. How do you look at this sometimes like it's a big work of fiction? Do you look at life sometimes like this is just fucking so nutty, it doesn't seem like it could be real? I mean, if anybody has seen the nuttiest, you might have witnessed some of the nuttiest shit on earth and come back to talk about it. I mean, you've got, in one life, think of all the fucking places you've been. Does it feel real?
What? We always say, they say about vice, and what's the political sort of stance of vice? We say we don't have one. It's the modern condition is absurd. There's the absurdity of fucking this mother. It's crazy. Like, it's fucking nuts. And then when you go out and see exactly how nuts it is, it keeps getting crazier and crazier and crazier. Cities get bigger. Stories are more insane. You know, we were just shooting in Karachi, which is a completely failed city. They have 100+ killings a night. You can hire a killer there to kill someone for $10. Actually, we rode around with one of these contract killers, and it's just shocking.
You rode around with a contract killer?
Yeah.
What the fuck is that like?
Well, Saru Shawi, my partner, did that story because I wouldn't have lasted long in doing that story in Karachi.
Why wouldn't you have lasted?
Well, Karachi is run by gangs, by like Haqqani Network, who are Taliban-related sort of mafia gang family. And then they have, you know, various Baluchistan gangs, and then they have, you know, the heroin trafficking gangs. And they're all fighting each other continually. It's insanely violent, and, it, you know, and basically you can't, if you're Caucasian, you can't sort of, no, there's no tourists there, for example. Like, there's no reason for you to be there. It's just complete Wild West shit.
It's so hard for people in Pasadena to believe, you know, driving around in Pasadena, that this coexists on the earth at the same time as that.
You have to picture it's like Escape from New York or something. I mean, Karachi's bigger than New York, and it's just...
What part of the world is it again?
It's Pakistan, but it's on the ocean. And it's a huge city, and it's just complete fucking anarchy, complete fucking chaos.
Whoa.
It's a war zone.
How many millions of people live in the city?
like 18 to 20 million.
Jesus Christ.
But all just going crazy.
18 to 20 million people live in Wild West. How do we not know about this? How do we not know about this? That's incredible.
Well, people know that Karachi's bad. But I guess
not like you described it. You described it like a movie. Like if Steven Spielberg decided to make a movie about that and told you that that city's going down right now on Earth, you'd be like, bitch,
it is
you don't
movie.
Think I'd know about that?
Yeah, it is a movie.
I mean, don't you think that that's something that would be like really, really popular? No one ever talks about that. If they made a movie right now about that part of the world, described the way you describe it, like some crazy horror movie about civilization gone wrong.
That's what it is.
Some Mad Max reality that's existing, coexisting right now, just as big as New York.
Yeah.
We'd go, no way. You know what I mean? We'd go, no way.
Yeah. Yeah, Karachi is complete chaos. Scary as hell. You know, Pakistanis are like, what? No one goes there. Why would you go there?
No one goes there, but 20 million people live there.
Yeah, yeah.
That is crazy.
It's crazy. Just shit burning in the streets. People pop, pop, pop. People getting killed.
Oh, my God.
Like running gun battles through the streets.
So you couldn't go. So you said, what is it your correspondent look like?
Saru, she's Pakistani.
She's Pakistani. It's a girl. He's Pakistani.
He also snuck into the gun markets, the Taliban gun markets, when the Americans said that the war was over and the Taliban were coming across into Northwest Frontier Province and getting 1,000 handmade guns. They make their own guns by hand. 1,000, like little kids make the guns. And 1,000 were going over every day. And we're like, well, if the war is over, why is this that there are 1,000 guns going across the border every day? And so we broke that story. That was Saroosh. And he just went back to Pakistan. And his story of Karachi is fucking insane. He's got unique access, but, you know.
Does he have video? Yeah. Does he have footage?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah? When can we see this?
He has a video. I think that's going to go up within the next month on Vice.com.
You got to let me know the moment that comes up.
He has a video of him with like riding around with this contract killer, obviously. But he's just sort of going from thing to thing with his gun. And they wear these moped helmets. And then so you can't see who they are. It's, you know, that's an insane thing, too.
Kill people for $10?
$10. There's a increase, or maybe it's just an increase of awareness or our awareness, but there's an increase in sort of assassination availability, and sort of there's been a price decrease or whatever, you know, because now we go and we see like in Karachi they have contract killers everywhere. We were shooting a lot recently in Juarez and in northern Mexico, and they have centenarios that get paid $200 a month, and their job is just to kill people. Like they're just the fucking muscle. They're assassins, you know. And when we were there, Juarez is actually the most dangerous town in the world for journalists. It's the same as, so there's El Paso on the Texas side, same city, and it's one of the safest cities in America. And then you go right across the border, and it's one of the most dangerous cities in the world, but it's the most dangerous city in the world for journalists, number one.
Why is that?
Because it's the drug cartels that run it, and they're smugglers, and so they don't want anyone to ever film their shit. So instead of, like, coming up to you when you have your camera and saying, hey, why are you carrying that camera? What are you shooting? They just see a camera go bang.
There's no point
in asking a question. And they make a lot of... If you write about something, they cut off your head and they write the story on your flesh with blood and all this stuff, and so that, you know, journalists just don't go there anymore.
Wow, that is kind of crazy that we're right next to a third world country involved in like the biggest drug war in the history of the world.
Yeah,
most Americans are blissfully unaware.
Well, we shot a big piece on that, and
of course you did. Did you get embedded?
Well, we got embedded with people who are fighting. This is a pretty freaky story, though. I don't know how much of it I'm allowed to say.
Oh, really?
But,
get another drink.
I can say a lot. It's a very complex story, and we're gonna cause some waves. But basically, we were down in Mexico. We'd done some stuff with the cartels. Incredibly difficult. Most difficult stories to get right now today are cartel stories. Because they just kill everybody. But we started hanging out with the people who were fighting the cartels, who are Mormon colonies that's originated in America so that they could keep practicing polygamy went to northern Mexico, and they formed polygamist Mormon colonies there. And because the colonies did well, the cartels started targeting them and started kidnapping them and killing them. And so the Mormon colonies started arming themselves and fighting against the cartels.
Jeez.
So there's been a war between the Mormon colonies and the narcos. And we went down there to live in the colonies, and we were hanging out with the LeBarons, who I don't know if you've ever heard of, but they have a crazy story of they had one of their brethren believed that he had the power of blood atonement, so he was killing all the people in the church that were trying to, you know, mess with him. So he had about 30, or maybe he had 50 children, nearly 50 children, and he had them work as assassins for him in this bloody war that they had down there. This is all happening not in the 1880s. This is happening in the 1980s. This is happening in, like, Blues Brothers 80s.
Oh, my God.
And so they have this crazy war, but they arm themselves, right, because they're all fighting it within the family. And then because of that, when the narcos attacked them, they were sort of armed and ready to go and badasses. So they started fighting them. But they're actually just one colony over from the other people that they came down with, who are the Romneys. So Mitt Romney's father was born in one of these colonies, the land. And then they now this is the
Mitt
question.
Romney's father was born in Mexico?
Mitt Romney's father was born in a polygamous colony in northern Mexico, Chihuahua.
Jesus
in colonial
Christ.
Colonial Dublin. And actually he ran for president, and they brought up the fact that he might have been an illegal immigrant, and that he was born in a polygamous colony in Mexico.
Right.
So his presidential candidacy didn't last long. We say that in the piece, but like,
but his son.
Well,
can
because
sneak
but
in.
No, but we say that out of all the candidates, Republican candidates, Mitt Romney had the staunchest, you know, stand against immigration, and you know, he sort of ignores his roots and he never talks about it. And you say, well, I understand why. It's completely logical because, you know, he wanted to veto the Dream Act, and he said publicly he'd veto the Dream Act, although his father is the poster child for the Dream Act. But you say he would veto the Dream Act because he wants to get away from these stories, because the stories, when you dig into them, are fucking insane. Of course he doesn't want to talk about, because polygamy battles with drug lords, you know, and and, you know, complete and kidnapping and insanity do not a good presidential candidate make.
How is this not mainstream? How is this? Is it going to come out during the presidential campaign?
Yeah, it's going to come out. We have great footage.
Mitt Romney, is he the official nominee yet on the Republican side? I mean, he obviously...
He will be, yeah.
He will be, but he's not official, no, right?
Yeah, he will be. But yeah, for sure it's going to come out. I mean, the thing is you know, it can't not come out. You know, people have written a little bit about it, not very much about it.
When you see a guy that's that flawed and has such an obvious story that's so beyond fucked, does it make you feel like this has all been set up? Does it make you feel like they put him in there because they knew he couldn't win? It doesn't make sense to me that's the best that the Republicans can do. I've met a lot of smart Republicans. I've met a lot of bad motherfuckers who are just conservative and right-wing, and maybe they're a little too Bible-y.
Right.
But, you know, I've met some pretty strong-minded, very articulate Republicans. How come they never get there? How come we're dealing with these like, second-rate hacks, these guys who just fucking change their opinion when the wind blows? Like, how does a guy like that get to a position to be running for president? Because that seems like that's a weak example of what a politician, a leader can be. We've seen the JFKs. We've seen the Bill Clintons. Mm. We've seen the people that have the strong voices. When you have a guy who's a wishy-washy as Mitt Romney, comes from a fucking religious cult that was in northern Mexico, I mean, I'm like, really? That's the best you can do? A multi-millionaire whose father was from another country but is against immigration? Mm. What?
Mm-hmm. I mean, look... The rumor is that they knew that the economy is going to keep going down, and, you know, jobs aren't going to get better, et cetera, et cetera. So they said, okay, you know, we'll just put up an also-ran, and, you know, then we'll get the next two terms after that, because the economy is going to be shit anyway.
Put Jeb Bush on tap.
There you go.
For 2016.
But, I mean, Mitt Romney, you know, it's funny because they want the anti-Obama, you know, so they just want to sort of...
They don't understand.
Yeah.
Obama's the first example I've ever seen in my life of it where it's pretty clear it doesn't matter anymore. Whatever it takes to get into office is... I mean, once the politician gets there, that's all out the window. All it is about there is keeping everything moving the exact same way it's moving right now, making sure these corporations make fucking billions of dollars, making sure that the rights of the civilians get shrunk more and more every day until it gets to this global scenario that we have where the whole world is controlled by money, and money is the government. And it seems to be where we're moving towards, an actual real government. Especially this idea of America, what it was supposed to be, you know, a government by the people. We were going to set it up. We were going to govern ourselves. We were going to have a very strict set of laws and checks and balances in place to make sure this doesn't get out of hand and become what it used to be. Doesn't work that way.
Mm.
How do we fix this, Shane Smith? How do we fix this? You're the world traveler,
I think,
man.
It's going to get worse because, actually, money does rule everything, and I think that it probably always has. But, you know, if you look at, you know, communism, the synthesis of communism is that the market regulates itself and you have a small thing for infrastructure. Same thing with capitalism, Ricardo Adam Smith. You know, the free market sort of does need government. But I believe that both were apologies for what was happening in the Industrial Revolution, because everyone was looking around saying, this is fucked. You know, every kids working in coal mines, all that shit. But the reason why I say it's going to get worse, and I'm actually an optimist. I'm not a doom and gloom guy, but is that money runs everything. But the problem is the money's running out, right? So you have kids, you know, in Spain you have under 27 years old, 50% unemployment. So you have all these young kids, and there's nothing scarier than a young kid with no future. You've just taken away his future. They're, you know, 17, 18, 19 year old kid. What the fuck does he have to lose?
Yeah.
And you've seen the riots in Athens, you've seen the riots in London, you've seen the riots in Paris, you've seen the riots in, I mean, Tahrir Square, you've seen all over the
world.
There's
even riots in Montreal this year.
There you go. And young people are getting more and more frustrated.
I should say protests in Montreal, they didn't really riot.
Yeah. And then the problem is that, you know, well, look, they have riots here now. They have Occupy Wall Street here. It's not going away. It's just, you know, sort of getting more and more subversive, and they're, you know, doing their own content networks and everything now. But, you know, when you have young kids rioting with nothing to lose, then you're going to look for radical economic solutions. And radical economic solutions mean radical political parties. Radical political parties hate each other. And it's the same sort of scenario you have that started World War II, incredible depression. You know, somebody comes up with what seemingly is sort of fixing the depression. Oh, we're all going to do that. No, we're going to do the antithesis of that. So you have communist versus fascist, et cetera, et cetera. And both are, you know, extreme sides of the spectrum. And then there ends up warring, you know, fighting. And what's happening now is, you know, Europe is just fucked. And it's going to get worse and worse and worse, and there's going to be more and more radical politics, more and more kids in the streets. And that's when I get worried and say, hold on a second, what are we going to do? Wait until there's, you know, militias running down Berlin, you know, Main Street, that's fighting other fucking police and whatever, civil war, until we step in and say, hey, can we not fix this? Because it's just getting fucking worse and worse and worse. And sure, you see bad shit in Afghanistan. You see bad shit in South America. We just saw it in Caracas, where it's insane, higher murder rate than America, you know, with 20 million people population, blah, 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 blah. But Europe is about to fucking explode. It's about to explode. So
this all has to do with the adoption of the euro? Is that what fucked this whole situation up? Because because Europe is all connected. All the countries are connected now. Right?
Well, I think it's, we've been in a depression, because what's the difference between a recession and a depression? A depression goes on for, you know, it's a cyclical economic downturn. It lasts, you know, a longer time than a recession. Well, because of quantitative easing, all these things, like economic things, we sort of kept it at bay. But right now, Europe's already back in recession. China's slowed down. India's slowed down. America's very shortly going to slow down behind them. There's no way we can't. And you go, okay, well, it's another 5 years. So that means, okay, well, it started in 2008. It's going to be, you know, 8 years, 9 years before we get out of this. So economically, we had all these things that we tried to fix, and it didn't work. So now there's just no money. There's no money, no jobs in the system. So young people are the ones who get forced out. The problem is young people are the first ones who are going to go out and get a stick and start bashing shit up. Because why wouldn't they?
Of course. Yeah, I mean, I've said that's the biggest problem with this country is that, you know, everybody wants to fix everything that's happening everywhere, but they don't want to fix what's going on in the impoverished areas of this country. When you're there was something that was released today, that a study on a message, it was on my message board, but I forget where the study was, but it said that 72% of black people in this country are born to single parents.
Mm-hmm.
And raised by single parents.
Mm-hmm.
That's fucked.
Mm-hmm.
That's just fucked. You know, if we want to like start fixing things, we got to fix this country too. I mean, if this country could fall apart just as easily. When you look at giant patches where kids are growing up without any hope, and that's the most fucked thing, when a child, like as you said, has no future. Mm-hmm. They feel they have no future, and they're angry. They feel robbed.
Well, it's you're saying, well, how does it feel to come back to New York from Afghanistan? You know, well, it reminded me so much of 9/11, but it was like this stark thing. Whereas what fucked me up more was when you're in Mexico, like 5 miles from the border, and shit is fucked up. Like some of the crazy shit you've seen, and generally, you know, it makes you feel better about your life. You feel, oh, you know, I'm happy. I have all these, you know, health and things. But I went to a church run outside of Juarez by a sort of born-again pastor who is an ex-junkie, and he takes in sort of the refuse of Juarez into this church, and it's like a lot of, you know, people with severe psychological problems, people with severe drug addictions, and a lot of there was two feral children, not children, they were adults now, but they had grown up feral, like on the streets sort of thing. One sort of barked like a dog. But you go and they live in these cells because some of them have to be locked in. And like there was, you know, people with open colostomy bags and stuff with flies buzzing around their innards and stuff and these things. And you're walking around and it was like just crazy fucking just degradation, like feral people going, ah, you know, and like a nightmare. Like it was crazy, you know, the pastor gets them to paint, and all their paintings are fucking insane, like so heavy and depressing, and a lot of them are missing limbs because of, you know, gangrene. And so when you come from shooting there, and then I was just in Vegas for the fights, and you walk around, and we went out like to, you know, a nightclub after the fights, and it's just Chanel and Louis Vuitton and this and that, and like everybody, you know, on the stores on the way to the nightclub, and then everyone dressed up, and you're like, as human beings, we just want to forget. You know, we just want TV, more just spectacular shit, just fucking lots of stuff, because we like to bury our heads in the sand, because that's just right here. Like, that shit is happening just fucking, you don't have to go to Afghanistan, it's 5 miles from our border. And so, you know, that's what you think when you come back from places like that. And by the way, all the guns, when we were there, it's the largest haul of ammunition. It was over 250,000 rounds of ammunition, 7.62 ammunition. And it was coming from America. And I was like, oh, that's, you know, strange. Like, no, all the guns are coming from America. All the guns, all the ammunition coming from America. All the drugs comes up from here. And all, excuse me, and all the money comes from America.
Well, what was that one crazy DEA idea? They were going to sell guns.
Fast and the Furious.
Yeah, they sold guns.
With markers.
Yeah, so that they could find out who's using the guns. And those guns were directly used to kill agents.
Yeah. Well, they figured that was a scam.
It was a scam.
Yeah.
And that they just pretended that it was a mission.
Yeah.
Just the fact that they could ever justify selling fucking guns.
Lots of guns.
To Mexican drug dealers.
They had the
How could they possibly think that that would...
They had a killer caught with the CIA, the old director of the CIA's ceremonial pistol.
Whoa.
Like, you know, it has, like, director of the CIA on it.
Holy shit.
So.
Holy shit. Just the fact that they could say that that was an operation, and they could say, oh, this is what we're going to do. The way we're going to track the network, we have to actually sell them real guns.
Yeah, the Mexicans laugh at it.
It's hilarious.
They're like, this is what the Americans are doing, just giving free guns to the narcos.
In order to find out what rapists are like, I'm going to have to go get my duck sucked a lot. I'm going to really have to find out what it's like to rape people. So I'm going to have to do some raping.
Yeah.
What? The fuck? How is no one getting... Why is no one going to jail for that?
Well, I mean, God knows. The majority of the police down in Mexico are corrupt, so every time the Americans try to do something with them, like, it just gets, you know...
Well, how's no one in the American DEA going to jail for that?
I don't know, man.
That just seems like the most ridiculous idea of all time.
Yeah. The worst guy I've ever heard about is a guy named El Riquin, and he's a narco that was fighting one of the Mormon colonies, but he's famous for, he's obviously the drug dealers, and so he went into a drug rehab center, or he didn't, but he had his people massacre them all, 18 different people in a drug rehab center, just for being in a drug rehab center, you know. So this is a very bad guy. And he kidnapped and killed some of the Mormon, the LeBaron family. But he is famous for getting caught on the other side of the border, on the American side of the border, with a Mexican military convoy filled with something like 15 tons of pot. And they had a firefight with the American Border Patrol, and then they came back into Mexico, and they knew who it was. They knew that they did. They knew he had had a firefight, but he went back to where he lives, which is 8 miles down the road from the Mormons, and the Mexican government didn't do anything.
Whoa!
I got a frog in my throat.
Jesus Christ!
Fuck. Yeah, El Riquin.
What a ballsy move! You want a water or something, man?
Yeah, maybe. Yeah.
Reach it. There you go. If you need more, there's a fridge right behind you. I'll grab you one.
Or I get some cigarettes.
Does that'll help?
Yeah.
You think that'll help?
Maybe. Totally.
Maybe.
What a ballsy move. That guy gets in a fucking armored convoy with weed and drives it to America.
And has a firefight with him.
Holy shit. Now, how are these Mormons getting around in Mexico? Do they all... take convoys now? Are they, like, heavily armed and shit?
They're heavily armed, yeah.
So do they, like, drive around with, like, tanks? Like, what what do they do? Because I know, like, a lot of the drug cartels, they have tanks now.
They have trucks with, you know, with guns and stuff.
So the Mormons drive around like they're in war?
Yeah.
Wow. What a nutty thing it must be for them, huh?
Yeah.
They are
at war.
And they can't get out of there. Are they trying to plan to get out of there?
They can get out of there. A lot of them have American passports.
But they don't want to do it.
But it's not like hanging with like Mexicans. Like, these are like big, super tall, cowboy hat wearing sort of Texas dudes.
But they're in Mexico.
They're in Mexico, yeah.
And they're going to war with these drug cartels. Yeah. I would think that if you're ever in a place where you're at war with drug cartels, it's time to get the fuck out of
yeah,
Dodge.
Well, we asked them that.
What'd they say?
Well, this is my country. This is my home. It's hard to leave your home.
Wow. Fuck that it is. That's some silly nonsense to me.
Yeah.
You know, I think people have to get over that idea. You should live anywhere. Get your loved ones together and move where it's safe. The fuck out of here.
Yeah.
If you have money, I mean, if you have enough to do it. I can understand if you have to fight for your property, but that's a lost cause, that place.
Yeah, but, you know, they don't leave. I had the same answer when I was in South Africa and we were shooting, and there's, like, a lot of violence in South Africa. And I kept saying to people, why don't you leave? And they said, this is our home.
Those people are idiots. That's crazy. Yeah. That's so ridiculous. Yeah. If you know there's a better spot on Earth where this kind of shit doesn't happen, you can live your life
in peace. Home invasions and assassinations and institutionalized rapes and all these things are just part of the daily equation, then fuck it. I'm not doing that.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree. Yeah. the fuck, man? How do we get the rest of the world anywhere near where we are here right now? Is that possible? Can the human condition evolve so much that we could ever get everybody on a higher level all across the world? Or is this just a part of the program? The spectrum always goes from the worst case scenario to the best case scenario and every shade in between. Is that just how things keep moving? Is that just the conflict, the yin and yang? Is that the pull and push of life?
That's the best question I've heard in a long time, but I think it's unanswerable.
If anybody would have seen it, the spectrum as broad as humanly possible, I would think it would be you. You or
I mean, the thing is if you see some things that are great, like we did a story on these scientists who are developing machines that can sort of harvest the atmosphere, so they can take out carbon and all the harmful things in the atmosphere, and then sort of reduce it to CO2, which you can make. You can actually activate algae for biofuel, or you can combine them with other elements and lots of solar to make hydrogen cells. And it might sound like, you know, we're clinging at straws here, but when you start to think, wow, you know, if we have unlimited solar power and you have unlimited carbon, A, it stops global warming, but B, you can make, you know, hydrogen cells or biofuels. And then you can say, wow, that would be interesting, because you could actually you could put hydrogen cells into like every new car, so every new car had to have that. So that's a whole new industry that we would run because of the patents. The only effluent that comes out of hydrogen cells is pure HO2, which we're running out of water. So you say, hey, it could build a new economy, build this new world. And so when you start talking to the scientists, who are really smart guys, and realizing, well, you can sort of regulate, you know, the amount of harmful toxins in the atmosphere, there is sanity. You know, there are people coming up with ideas. This could start a whole new economy, you know, sort of set us out on this, you know, great right track. And you're like, wow, and you feel really good. And maybe we are going to be smart. Maybe we are going to put these machines next to every factory. Maybe we are going to do this great stuff. And then the problem is you go to Africa or Southeast Asia, and, you know, we did a story on, you know, a lot of people are going, Europeans and Americans are going to Thailand, you know, to get medical vacations, they call them. So you go there and you get a facelift and 2 weeks on vacation on Boracay or whatever. And so, you know, then you can get transplants, you can get this, you can get that. So more and more people are going for medical procedures. So it started a war between the ambulance gangs to take bodies, you know, because let's say you hurt yourself. Well, more than often than not, you're not going to arrive alive because they want to harvest your pieces. So Bangkok body snatchers. So there's like street gangs that fight each other over the sort of dead and dying.
So say if someone falls and breaks their leg.
Yeah.
They're not going to take you to the hospital. They're going to take your organs.
Well, if you're injured, they're going to make sure that you don't arrive alive. And then they harvest your organs.
So they kill you?
Yes, they let you die. Yeah.
They let you die?
Yeah.
They don't kill you? They let it slowly take you. They don't give you medical attention?
We never saw anybody sort of overtly being killed. We've heard about it, but...
You don't want to say it?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Well, they don't seem like they're ethical. So yeah. I wouldn't imagine that would be outside the realm of possibility. Yeah. But I understand exactly where you're going with that. You don't want to say it.
On one side, you have this sort of hope. You know what? We're going to get our shit together. We're going to have new fucking energy systems that aren't going to arm crazy people and all this stuff. And then and then you go see that, and you're like, wait a minute. We're parasites. We're bad, bad people.
Yeah, I did this thing before my Showtime special in 2005 where I talked about human beings being a really complicated form of bacteria. Mm. So I've had this idea a few times while tripping and inside tanks and even on planes. You know, I've had this feeling like if you looked at the Earth as a life force and you looked at human beings, you would say, well, that's a growth. Yeah. You would say, look, it's everywhere. It sucks all the fish out of the ocean. Mm-hmm. It throws waste in there and kills all the rest of the life. It fucks mm-hmm. everything it touches. It everywhere it lives, there's brown smoke. Mm-hmm. You burn down giant chunks of it, it grows right back and even gets bigger. Mm-hmm. It's like, this is some crazy growth.
Yeah.
I'm like, if you didn't understand human, if we, you were so alien that human beings weren't identifiable as an individual, you would look at them as a giant, huge swarm of life on top of this other life. You wouldn't see individual people. You would see it just like mold. And I said that maybe we're here to eat the sandwich. Maybe we are like mold on a sandwich. That maybe we're just a really super complicated thing that's here to fuck things up. That's why at the pinnacle of technology, the best we have to do is the shit that fucks things up the most. Yeah. Like nuclear power, nuclear waste, you know, and all sorts of other crazy experiments that are probably going on right now that we're not even aware of. Antimatter type shit. They're working on antimatter weapons in Area 51. Mm-hmm. What does that mean? I don't even know. I don't even know, but it can't be good. It's like, what, nuclear power doesn't kill everybody quick enough, you fuckhead? You need to develop something that kills everyone instantaneously? We have enough bombs to blow up the whole world, like how many times over? And they're like, yeah, but it doesn't do it quite as good as I think can be done.
Yeah.
So they continue to make nuttier and nuttier weapons. Did you see that the jet drone they've developed that goes something like 18 times faster than the speed of sound?
Right.
Some insane amount just to get over there and fuck things up as quick as possible.
Yeah. We don't need any better weapons. That's, you know, we have weapons that we don't even have the first clue about now.
Well, it's what I've. But we, our nature as animals, as intelligent animals, is to keep trying to make things better. Yeah. It's like if we stop right now with cell phones and said, "We good with this? Yeah. We can talk. We can text. This is good enough, right? Can we just stop right there?" Yeah. No one would take that. People would go crazy. 4 years from now, they'd be fucking so mad at their iPhone. This fucking clunky old hunk of shit. Like, why can't they have something better than this now?
Right.
People would be angry. We have a deep desire for technological innovation. At the end of that is destruction.
Yeah.
At the very peak of technology, the best we're capable of is blowing shit up.
Mm-hmm.
It makes you wonder if that's really what we're here for. It makes you wonder if we are not some weird technological caterpillar that's becoming a butterfly. And all of our desires and ego and the need to get pussy and drive a fast car, all that shit really is just pushing the society, and the society is pushing technology, and technology, one day someone's going to press a fucking button, and the whole thing,
see, now I'm not going to be so smiley anymore.
Maybe that's the way it's supposed to be, though.
You just bummed me out.
Well, my theory is that that's, that's how the universe gets born and dies with us. And that the Bing Bang is really just a bunch of scientists with autism on anti-anxiety medication. And they make a Big Bang machine.
Yeah.
And one of them presses it, and the whole universe starts all over again.
Maybe.
And it starts again with planets forming, and then life forms, and then dinosaurs. The dinosaurs get hit by an asteroid. Billions of years go by, the whole deal. And then one guy presses a button on a Big Bang machine he makes. Boom! And it starts all over again. Why not? If it's possible for the universe to be the universe, that's possible too. It's possible that it's just a bunch of scientists with autism, and every 14 billion years they blow the whole fucking thing sky high and it starts from scratch.
Well, definitely, we're going to have to eat, drink, and be merry then, because we're all going to...
That's what I'm talking about.
Right.
What do you think when you talk to these people that are like, I mean, for you, you are a realist. You're a dude who's seen the dark parts of the world. When you talk to people and they, you know, they start hitting you with some fucking power of positive thinking type shit and hit you with The Secret or Eckhart Tolle, and, you know, like, do you want to, like, when that whole The Secret thing was going on, do you want to say, listen, your fucking environment is real, okay? You don't create it with your mind. It's real. There really are parts of the world that suck, and positive thinking is not going to get you out of Mogadishu, right?
Well... We are in Pasadena. I mean, like, you know...
Positive thing got you here.
Yeah, there you go. You know, New York tends to be a bit more cynical, and L.A. tends to be a bit more...
It's the weather.
Positive thinking.
Weather and pretty girls. That's what it does it.
That's it.
For real.
Yeah. And space.
Space. The fact that it's not... You don't get rained on hardly ever, and it's never cold.
Right.
That's huge.
Yeah.
That East Coast winter thing is... That's bullshit.
Yeah.
That's retarded. Everybody gets angry. Yeah, your face hurts.
Yeah.
You know, that shit's no good. You get stuck on the highway. Ever get stuck on the highway? Yeah. The whole fucking highway shut down. Black ice. That's always fun.
Black ice.
That shit doesn't happen here. Doesn't happen here at all. So people are more relaxed.
Yeah.
It really
more
is
positive.
That. Plus, the people that landed on the East Coast were all animals who were so fucking fed up with Europe that they got on boats. They got on boats, mm-hmm. and they got went across an ocean before there was TV, mm-hmm. okay? And they decided to move to this new country that they didn't have probably even have good pictures of.
Right.
You know, someone just told them there's a land of plenty, and they decided to get in a boat and give it a shot. Those people are psycho.
Right.
I mean, those are some really adventuresome fucking people.
Well, those were the first ones. Those were all adventuresome. But the ones you said, okay, you're going to go out that way. We don't know how far it is, and we don't really know if you're going to get there. And by the way, there's all kinds of, you know, tribes that are going to try to scalp you and rape your daughters and all this shit as you go through there. And there's mountains that are probably impassable.
And you're going to have to eat your kids.
Just go.
Yeah.
Go west. And,
yeah.
And it was the, when we say frontier, it was like the frontier.
Yeah.
It was, we don't know what's next. We don't know what's beyond there. And so for those people to say, I'm going to leave, I'm like a Irish fucking potato picker, and I lived in New York for 3 years, and that was no good. So I'm going to go out, and I'm just going to go out into fucking absolute wilderness where everybody hates me and the animals want to eat me, and I'm just going to keep going until I hit the other ocean. It's crazy.
And it's amazing how quick it happened.
Yeah.
It was just like, bing, whoosh. Yeah. Within a couple hundred years, a giant fucking swarm of millions of people had completely populated this one continent that, before that, you know, the last time people came across here was the Ice Age. Yeah. There wasn't really a lot of human beings living here.
No.
What most people don't know is in North America, just a little over 10,000 years ago, half of it was covered by a mile of ice.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, wrap your head around a mile of fucking ice mm-hmm. above your head,
yeah.
and that covered half this country.
Yeah.
This country that we don't understand, like, the history of humanity in the world. We have a very patchy sort of knowledge of everything past the Ice Age. Everything about people 10,000 plus years ago, there's some bullshit. There's a lot of bullshitting because there's a lot of information they're not willing to look at.
Right.
Some new stuff's come along, new construction that they've found, like in Turkey, this Göbekli Tepe that's at least 14,000 years old. Massive, excellently cut stone columns. Civilization, clear civilization. Back in a time where they're attributing that area only as hunter and gatherers. There is no civilization. There's no cities. Where's the fucking city, man? You gotta explain this.
Yeah.
Not only that, as drawings of statues that are carved into it, like these 3D images of animals that don't even exist in that area, that part of the world. So it's real possible that shit like, you know, the ice being over half of this country, that's moved around for tens of thousands of years. And there's probably been these pretty kind of nifty, sophisticated civilizations, but maybe they get to a point, not even as far as we've gotten right now, but maybe get to some previous point and just implode. Like those crazy assholes in Pakistan, or implode like Nazi Germany, or implode like a million different examples from Genghis Khan to the Catholic Church. Look at all the crazy shit that's gone on in this country. This
100%.
It easily could be like that always, and that we've gotten to these really amazing Atlantean type civilizations and just fucking chaos. Boom! Somebody comes in strapped up with dynamite. Who the fuck knows?
Right.
And just aces the whole thing. There's one part of the world, somewhere in the Middle East, I forget where it is, where there's they found glass in the desert. They found like this area in a satellite image. God, I wish I had more information about this from the tip of my tongue. But it was either some sort of an asteroidal impact, or like hundreds of thousands of years ago, somebody had a fucking gigantic explosion there.
Right.
Like, if it was like some sort of civilization and they flattened that motherfucker out. That's not outside the realm of possibility that someone figured out something, some sort of massive way to fuck things up. You know, that we're the only ones that have ever figured that out throughout history. It's very possible that somebody else might have done. We might have done this whole dance to the top a couple of times before tumbling.
Yeah.
You know, this is just the highest we've ever gotten and kept it together.
We're very good at destroying shit, that's for sure.
I've got this guy coming on June 7th, for those of you who have been asking me about this, John Anthony West. And he's this Egyptologist who is famous for his work in uncovering the fact that there's not just one Egyptian civilization that they're dealing with. You're dealing with older and older civilizations that go back to 30 plus thousand years.
Mm-hmm.
There's actual hieroglyphs that show that Egyptian civilization goes back that far. Like, they even name the pharaohs. But for some reason, modern-day Egyptologists have looked at all this stuff and said, that, oh, that's a myth. Like, right. Everything was real up until about 5,000 years ago, and all the rest of that stuff, is just they just made that shit up.
Right.
Because it doesn't coincide with our own ideas of how long civilization has been around for.
Sure.
You know, it just seems to me that when you look at how sophisticated we are today and how close we are to fucking it up and how badly it is fucking up and all the places in the world that you described, it seems like the odds that we haven't done this already, like, it just seems really small. And you know, I think we've got a lot of amnesia when it comes to the past of humans. And I think you also have to factor in physical things that we can't control, like the earth, volcanoes, earthquakes, asteroidal impacts, shit like that. You know, when I'm driving here today, I was driving on the 118, and it's beautiful. You're going through the hills, the mountains, and I'm looking up, and I'm just saying, it is amazing that we are basically in, the whole world is a convertible.
Right.
There's no top.
Yeah.
And we're just have sort of accepted that. We're just head to the universe.
Mm.
Just nothing but space, and fucking giant rocks can fall from the sky and crush your country. And we've just sort of completely forgotten about that. I mean, there's impact holes that you can visit.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if you look at the general life of the universe, you know, the universe being billions of years old, right? Mm-hmm. And then look at all the holes on Earth. And then you just think, how long have we been around? 4.6 billion years. How many holes are there? This is going to happen again, you motherfucker.
Right.
We're forgetting that this shit happens. Like, there's hundreds of thousands of them.
For sure.
You know, they're as big as states.
Yeah.
And they're flying through the air. And they're going to land.
Yeah.
And they're going to fuck up everything.
You're really depressing me.
You can throw that. No, it's not bad, man. I think if we're going to go, that's a fucking amazing way to go. That's going to be quick. It's going to be quick and it's going to be crazy. And you don't have to worry about anybody suffering.
Yeah.
You know, it's like we're not afraid to sleep, but everybody's afraid to die.
Mm-hmm.
And both of them are inevitable. It's going to happen. You're going to die. It's not like we're going to live forever if the asteroid doesn't come.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to die for sure. That might be a crazy way to do it. I'm not saying it's good, but it might not be bad. It might be the way it has to happen for the next ultra intelligent thing to come along that wouldn't have existed before the dinosaurs, wouldn't have existed before us. Maybe the next
I'd rather go out by an asteroid than a series of sort of dirty bombs by some sort of cult or religious, you know, terrorism.
Did you see the latest footage from Syria, all the murdered children?
Yeah.
What the fuck is going on over there?
Well, it's the same thing, you know, that happened in Libya. It's the same thing, you know, that might happen in Egypt. When people fight, it's what you said about Vietnam. Don't they remember Vietnam? And you know, when you go to these places and you see what injuries look like, which are colostomy bags and you know legs that are gone and arms that are gone, you say, well, you know, why would you ever do this again? And then, you know, a generation forgets, and then they go do something else. They go just go do it again.
How do we stop the cycle? Is it possible without mushrooms?
I don't think so.
Are mushrooms the only way?
I think it's,
that's what I'm thinking.
I think the asteroids have to do it.
Asteroids?
I'd rather have the asteroids do it than...
Well, you know the concept of asteroids coming from mushrooms?
No.
Or excuse me, mushrooms coming from asteroids? Asteroids coming from mushrooms. Maybe the world comes from mushrooms.
This
Maybe.
Is getting to be a really trippy.
Well, this is from McKenna. McKenna's theory. Panspermia is a real theory of life.
Right.
You know, the theory that amino acids and certain nutrients and things and water, in fact, comes from comets and asteroids, and that life is transferred from planet to planet by asteroidal impact. This is a legit scientific theory. Well, McKenna's theory about psilocybin was that psilocybin is completely alien to any other form of life that we have here on Earth. There's nothing like it biologically or biochemically. I'm not saying exactly right, but I believe it's like 4-phosphoryloxy(NN)-dimethyltryptamine. It mimics the human neurotransmitter dimethyltryptamine, which is a potent psychedelic drug. It mimics that, but it also has like the phosphorus in the 4 position, which apparently no other compound on Earth does.
Mm.
And the idea is that spores can exist in a vacuum, and that spores could easily have traveled through the vacuum and the radiation of space and landed from another planet here, created this life form that wants you to eat it. So it pops up and looks like a dinner plate, and it pops up all over the place. Everywhere you go, it's not hiding at all.
Right.
And karmically, it's literally at the bottom of the food chain. It lives on shit. Mm. It's just a humble little thing that wants you to come along and eat it. And when you eat it, you're granted spectacular visions. Spectacular visions and feelings of love and God and unity and the thoughts of the universe being entirely connected in one big mathematical equation, computations and cells and organisms and fucking all the way down to atoms and subatomic particles and then branching out again. And all this shit comes from something that grows out of shit. Yeah. All this shit comes from something that comes from space. And the idea is that our concept of life and our concept of intelligence is very narrow. And we egocentrically have assumed that all intelligence must be contained inside a brain. Right. Some sort of an intelligent, upright body that we can respect. That's going to come here from another planet and show us how to use a laser gun. You know, but in fact, intelligence can exist in plant form, and that intelligence in spectacular visions and knowledge all comes out of a dimension that you cannot access without these molecules that exist in these plants. And it opens literally chemical doorways in the mind. Mm. It's a pretty fascinating idea, the fact that, you know, that is alien invasion, that mushrooms are an alien invasion.
I gotta read this. Who's McKenna?
Terrence McKenna?
Yeah.
He's a crazy psychedelic chemist slash botanist slash, I think his degrees were all in ethnobotany. Mm. And his main study of work was the concept of the stoned ape theory. That and his idea of time wave zero, which the idea was that time was like a mathematical progression of waves, and that like novelty and terrible times would all just, they would all be almost be predictable. Mm. That you could, it was some sort of a mathematical equation getting to infinite novelty, which was like in this year supposedly.
Really?
Which is probably horseshit. But his other, the fascinating theory was the mushroom theory, the stoned ape theory. And that was the theory that's how human beings actually evolved from lower primates, was the consumption of psychedelic mushrooms. And his theory, actually, I don't know if it's been supported by a lot of different scientists. I know there's some debate on whether or not his timelines are right. Yeah. But it's based on the idea that a bunch of monkeys ate some mushrooms and that helped them evolve.
It's interesting how many theories there are about how we got from sort of that to this.
Yeah. Well, it's crazy. Wow. We go to visit them in the zoo. I took my kids to the zoo the other day, and I'm staring at my cousins.
Sure.
In a cage.
Well, here in the home of Scientology, you know, they believe that the aliens came and the fetans went into the monkeys, and that's what we are. We're just vessels for alien souls.
Well, that's the sexiest idea.
Yeah.
The sexiest idea is the Anunnaki stuff. You know, the stuff that we were created by aliens and we're a genetic engineering program. And, you know, you look at, like, stuff from the Sumerian text from, like, 6,000 years ago that depicts the Anunnaki coming here. And how do you not know that that's not science fiction? Maybe that's, like, their version of outer space.
Yeah.
Or the outer limits or something like that.
Well, it's insane how many people are like, this was how it happened. It's aliens, mushrooms, it's this, it's that.
Well, the weird thing is the doubling of the human brain size. I don't know what the fuck happened, man. Mm. But I think it's probably a lack of information more than it is. I think it can't just be mushrooms that we did. Mm. If we did, that would be amazing. If it was like mushrooms, all you had to do is just regularly eat mushrooms, your brain would just grow. If we just got on mushrooms, within 100 years, we'd look like those gray aliens, just giant heads.
Yeah.
We wouldn't need any muscles because we would use our minds to control matter. We'd just be moving shit around constantly with our minds.
I feel a mushroom chirp coming on today, I think.
You think so?
I think I'm ready to do it today.
Well, you got that. You got one over here, man. You want a cigarette?
That's going to fix
it. Yeah, today I was thinking
this is how much
today.
I love you. I hate cigarettes, and I'm handing them to you. I'm like, I just want you to like me. I just want you to be happy, Shane. I love you, too.
You're blowing my mind today.
A lot of people
blowing my mind always.
A lot of people have been passing around this speech that you gave. I forget, it was some conference lately where you were talking about the future of television. Can you explain it? Because I haven't actually watched it yet, but I'm interested in what you...
Yeah, it was a speech for Internet Week about, you know, everyone's online versus cable. And, you know, what I was saying was, so I didn't know what to do. I didn't have anything planned that was very smart. So I was flying back actually from Afghanistan. No, I was flying back, from Afghanistan, and I ducked into Pakistan to see the Karachi shoot. So I was flying back from Pakistan. And I was... thinking about all the kids that I had seen who were going insane and who were, you know, the guys who would kill for $10, and this is fucking just crazy fucking dudes. And I was like, look, the youth everywhere in Asia and Africa and in Europe here, everyone's fucking revolting. But what are we making? Like, so, and then I went to do the upfronts, which is where all the TV shows get sold and online shows get sold. And you have like The Voice, which is the biggest show, which is just American Idol. You know, TV is a derivative of TV. TV is just making shittier and shittier shows based on itself. And then on the internet, which could be this, it could be revolutionary because it's better, because you can be watching something, then text somebody, then get information, mm-hmm. then Google this and fucking what's going on here and here. And instead of trying to be and say what the fuck is going on, and by the way, young people are revolting all around the world, and this is how they get their news now. They get it through blogs and online shit here and there. They don't even watch TV anymore. But instead of doing something innovative and challenging and revolutionary, we just do shittier versions of TV shows with half the budget. And so it's these shitty sort of Google shows. You know what really pisses me off is it's like America's Home, you know, Funniest Home Videos with a sort of annoying host. And you're like, why don't we use the internet? Why don't we use, you know, the social networks and, you know, video and all the stuff we can do now to actually do something that's good and revolutionary and start changing shit? Because when he asks and says, well, how do we fucking stop all this shit? Well, the first way you stop about it is to find out about it. So we have to know about it, and then we know about it, and then we can do shit. Like, we can not buy certain things, you know, dollar advocacy, you know, consumer advocacy is the most powerful, you know, tools we have, et cetera, et cetera. But first of all, is knowing about it, and so I just sort of got really pissed off that the internet has become so derivative and so shitty, and just trying to mimic TV, and TV is shit.
Yeah.
So let's try to fucking make something that actually people understand, or that people like, or that people, that helps people, or they understand of shit. Like, for example, like Kony 2012, you're like, well, it shows that it's viral. It shows that people actually want to know this shit, and shows that. But like it was okay. Like, it was just sort of half-assed.
What did you think about that whole situation? I mean, that is another example of one of the reasons why I believe that life is a work of fiction. A fucking guy decides that he's gonna make this viral video against James Coney.
Whacking it. Oh,
is that his name? Charles Coney? James Coney. Is going to make this viral video, expose the world to this horrible person, but they're getting a disproportionate amount of the money goes to them, and then they get accused of being unscrupulous, whatever the words you would use. They didn't do anything illegal. They just they're a little funky with the money. Then the guy shows up naked in the streets, beating off, acting gay. Did you see the video?
Yeah.
Like craziness. Like,
yeah, well, you know, I'm sure they didn't think, you know, they went, there's these, you know, kids, they go over and they shot it, and, you know, fair fucks to them. You know, I've been there, it's a bad part of the world. And you know, what, it's interesting on a few points. One, because it shows that the fucking, like, everyone says, kids don't care, people don't care about anything outside of America. Like, it's a big, in media, they always say, don't do anything, you know, outside of America, people just don't give a shit about it. Well, I think it shows that people do give a shit about it. And these guys weren't expecting it to become a huge thing. And, you know, so obviously when weird shit happens to you, you have different ways of coping. This guy coped by going fucking
completely ape shit
crazy, which actually seems appealing sometimes. Like, when life's really hard, you're just like, I'm going to take off my fucking clothes. And walk off into the street. Oh, there's fucking serial killers and assassins everywhere. Oh, I'm going to get your fleshlight. Fucking go fucking up.
That guy was on the street. In his underwear, he got naked. He was like flailing his arms around and acting like super gay.
Yes.
I wonder what he was on. What makes you act gay? Besides being gay.
Mostly cocks, balls.
Booty holes. Red band fleshlights.
Oh.
What is
But yeah, Coney. I mean, the thing is it became huge, and I think it shows that there's a massive audience. Anyway, so
that it's possible.
Yeah, and the whole thing is let's make shit that actually isn't shit. Let's make stuff that, you know, is telling the stories, and so that's what we're doing. And I said, you know, look, if it's Vice who's doing it, then we're really in fucking trouble, because I didn't come up, you know, with any sort of save the world complex.
Yeah, but you're not compromised yet. And as a human being, when you gotten to the point where you see this information, you're not compromised. So you're releasing it and you're focusing on it. Right. And you have an honest eye for what.
Well, it's also when we went around the world and expanded the company, you just see all this shit happening and you're like, what the fuck? Why isn't anybody fucking saying this shit? And then, but I always say that, look, if we're a news source, then it's the world's in trouble, because we were a style mag. You know, we gave a shit about was fucking, you know, famously say, you know, cocaine, supermodels, rare denim, and sneakers. And then when you go around the rest of the world, you're like, holy fucking shit. And you sort of, you know, come out of the pond and go, okay, well, we got to do something about this.
Well, I think that's probably, they're here to get you.
Yeah.
They've had enough. I think it's probably, you know, the only way journalists ever become journalists in the first place. They have something that they feel needs to be said, right? They have this desire to send a message, and that comes from seeing things that are wrong, seeing things that need to be reported on, things that, you know, and it turned you into a journalist.
Yeah.
I mean, essentially, the reality of the world turned you into a journalist, and you're the perfect example of what a journalist should be, because you're not compromised, because you can do these stories, and you can. I mean, if you had someone overseeing you, someone from NBC or CBS, do you think you could have gotten any of this stuff done?
Well,
if you said to them, "Hey, I'm going to go to Pakistan and I'm going to meet with the Taliban,"
I don't think. Yeah, we wouldn't be allowed to do a lot of the stuff that we do, because we just go. And you know,
you don't get permits. You guys just go.
Generally don't get permits.
Do you ask for the people if you could put them in a movie or on television?
Internet. Yeah, yeah. The people
themselves. They sign anything?
Yeah.
They sign things.
Yeah. But people generally want to tell their stories. But I mean, ask government permission or police permission or all, you know, the things you're supposed to. Or also, you're generally supposed to go with security teams. And we're like, well, I did a security team once because we were doing a show with MTV and. They made us get one in Beirut, and I'd been to Beirut like 20 times. Beirut's not that bad. There's sometimes parts of it that are bad, but and we were walking Target because you just have all these dudes like talking.
Yeah.
And so I said, I'm never going to have security ever again, because that's the sure way that you're not going to get a story, or the real people aren't going to talk to you, or everyone's going to think, who are the fuck these guys?
Right.
So we go, and you just we call it immersionism. You just go immerse yourself, you know, in the place, and then just, you know, press record. Don't go in with any sort of preconceived ideas or notions or political paradigms, or I'm going to prove this, because generally you're not going to prove that. Like, for example, if you went to Somalia and said, I'm going to prove that these guys are barbarian pirates, and, you know, then you're going to shut yourself off to exactly what you said, which is, well, actually, we illegally irradiated their whole coast and illegally overfished it so that they're starving, and they're like, well, we're going to tax the people who did this to us.
Yeah, they're called the People's Coast Guard. What, Voluntary Coast Guard of Somalia?
Yeah,
that's what they call themselves.
Yeah.
What the fuck, man? Dude, if anybody knows how to fix this, it's you.
No.
You see it all. I think it's the internet.
Yeah. Well,
I think it's the only hope we have. The internet and technology. The technology, like what you were saying about pulling carbon out of the atmosphere and cleaning the air and reusing the fuel.
Yeah.
That makes sense. I mean, if technology can put it out there, it seems like, you know, we should be able to harvest it. So maybe not now, maybe 100 years from now, whenever the fuck it actually becomes viable.
Well, somebody asked me at Internet Week, the guy said, well, what if I'm not angry? You know, I'm, whatever, 22, and, you know, I'm not angry, and I want to go get an MBA and make money. And I said, great. You know, I think that there was the sort of our grandparents' generation that you know, they didn't know better, so they were like, oh, space age food, you know, the TV dinners, and let's produce all the food, let's make it all with computers and or whatever, you know, assembly lines. And so it started to be bad for us, you know, all these things, Agent Orange, let's, you know, do, you know, all these terrible things. But they didn't know any better. The technology was sort of their, you know, savior. But the baby boomers, you know, they were the first generation that knew better, but still became the largest energy consumers, the largest garbage producers, all this thing. Gen X has sort of slipped by, but guess what? The bill's here, and it's going to be Gen Y. Like, they have to pay. There is no get-out-of-jail-free card now. So, as you're seeing economically and, you know, socially and culturally and politically, we're shifting. And if you just want to sort of say, I'm going to stick my head in the sand, which we've done for a little while, I don't think you're going to be able to anymore.
I agree with you, and I agree that things are shifting, and I also think that that's why these attacks on the Constitution have been permitted and are being pushed through. I think they've seen the prognosis, and they've seen the future, And the future is the trends that we see on the internet. It's a trend towards a more libertarian line of thinking. It's a trend towards a smaller government, more accountability, less bureaucracy. The idea of creating jobs doesn't mean you create some new fucking laws that you have to saddle everybody with and a bunch of people to enforce those laws. And that's what a lot of these politicians like to think of as creating jobs. You know, it's not you're creating problems, and you cunts that are keep attacking the Constitution and pulling amendments apart and really defacing the whole idea of what this country was founded on. They're doing it just because they sense the future. And the future is not it's not going to work the way it works now. It's just not. We're not going to deal with this whole idea of representative government. We're not going to deal with special interest groups. That shit is nonsense. That's got to go away.
Yeah. I think if you look at what's happening, too, is if you look at Syria, for example, if you look at what happened in Egypt or Libya, you know, I spent a lot of time in those countries. Just before the revolution, I got arrested in Libya. And then when I went back, I would have never called this. You know, not a lot of people did. I would have said the opposite because it was so restrictive and it was so, you know, hardcore and everyone was so pro-regime. But because of the internet, because of Twitter, because of Facebook, because of all these social tools, you had all these young people able to communicate and say, actually, I'm pissed off too. We're all fucking pissed off. Hey, let's change. And I think that, you know, that change isn't going to be pretty in a lot of cases, and it's going to be problematic. But you do have young people who are taking up arms. Now, you also have young people who are just smashing the shit out of cities like they did in Paris and especially in London last summer. But, you know, what happens when you know, Occupy Wall Street becomes Egypt, you know, to try to smash the status quo? What happens when Occupy Wall Street becomes Syria or becomes Libya? And, you know, it's not in the foreseeable future, maybe, but I didn't call Libya or Egypt or Syria either. You know, there's a lot of unrest out there, and there's a lot of people communicating that unrest. And in fact, if you see that in America, it's growing. And that if I was campaigning this summer, then I would be focusing on, we have a huge fucking groundswell and a global groundswell of dissatisfaction with the only group that's actually going to get off their ass and do something about it.
You must have at least some emotional attachment to Julian Assange and the WikiLeaks case.
Sure.
When you see this this case and this Bradley Manning kid, yeah. this who's, I believe, is still in solitary confinement.
Yeah.
I don't even know if does he have a court date. I mean,
I don't know, but
they just locked this kid in a box and cut him off from humans until he's got. I'm sure he's completely crazy at this point. Yeah. I don't think you can not go crazy in solitary confinement for 5 years. I think.
Well, it just shows that conspiracy theorists aren't crazy.
I mean, they're not crazy at all,
because the majority of these are proof that there are, you know, very sordid and unseemly things going on every day.
100%. And the information that guy released alone makes him a hero. Mm-hmm. That guy released things that are anti-American. He released things that are, they're war crimes. He right. saw war crimes. We're not war criminals. We're America's. We're American.
Yeah.
This is how most proud Americans feel. Mm-hmm. We're American and we're not cunts. Mm-hmm. That's it. We don't take any bullshit, but we're not cunts. That's when you get a guy who feels that, and he's an American, and he's a soldier, and he wants to, you know, he's a voluntary soldier, signed up to represent this government,
yeah.
and he sees this government doing horrible shit that's not being reported, and it's being covered up. Covering shit up when you do crimes is not how crimes get resolved.
Well,
it's
since not, when did telling the truth and keeping governments and big business in check become anti-American?
That guy's a goddamn patriot. He's
exactly.
a patriot, and he's locked in a box. And then Julian Assange gets in trouble. This WikiLeaks thing is so fascinating, man. People were accusing me of getting my information wrong. But no, he's not even accused of rape. He's accused of having sex without a condom. I wasn't lying. He apparently, you know, they were sleeping together, and he stuck it in this chick. I don't know the fucking full story. But the bottom line is, that's why they're trying to export this guy. Mm. Like, if that's not the craziest thing, we're going to regulate voluntary sexual. I mean, two people are naked in bed. We're going to decide what didn't happen between a guy and a girl. And you're going to spend that much fucking money to monitor this guy and make sure he checks in constantly. And he's put videos online of his daily routine. He has to drive to the police station and check in before he can do things. It's under house arrest. The whole thing is madness.
Well, the thing is the fact that they keep going on the story and saying, yeah, we don't want him for actually blowing the whistle on every crime that's been going on in the government. We want him for this sort of weird, you know, quasi thing that happened in Sweden that wouldn't be considered anything anywhere else.
Well, yeah, what I think someone described it as surprise sex. Like, that's not it's not even rape technically. Right. It's like they had had consensual sex, but with a condom. And then they were lying in bed. I don't know what the fuck really happened, so I shouldn't even be saying this. But the idea that they're wasting so much resource on a sexual issue that's not even a violent one, not even rape.
But it's kind of smart, actually, because for example, it's the one thing that you can't say, well, they just drummed it up and it's bullshit, and because well, rape is very serious.
It's the worst.
So you're in a catch-22 of saying, well, they just drummed it up to get this guy for blowing the whistle, but at the same time, they drummed up the one thing that is sort of taboo to go against.
It's the number one thing, yeah. But they couldn't even get a good version of it. Mm-hmm. I mean, the story is so weak. Like, if it was, he roofied her and he did this, and he tied her up and took pictures, and we have the pictures. Right. Oh, well, the guy's obviously a cunt that released important information. Right.
But I think the sad thing about it is that you look at, Deep Throat, who announced who he was and all this stuff, and he did it to save the government and all that stuff. He's a hero, right?
Right.
And
it depends on who won. If Bradley Manning could come out to be a hero, Julian Assange could come out to be a hero if there was some crazy revolution.
Right.
And in the future, we realized this is where the turning point of American society, when they said, we're not going to take this bullshit anymore, when they watched that Collateral Murder video and realized, what are we doing to our children when we're forcing them to even think like this? This is acceptable. You have this one shot at life, and this is how you're going to spend some of your time shooting missiles down at innocent people wandering through the street.
But my question is, when did it change from journalism and the Fourth Estate's job being to make sure that politicians weren't lying, to make sure that corporations weren't doing these bad things? And
I think Watergate changed it, right?
Well, I think actually distribution, I think, changed it, because four companies run all news media, and they're all major global corporations that all have huge advertising, and so they're conflicted and they don't go after politicians. And I remember during the Iraq War, people knew that that this was all a construct. They knew that there weren't weapons of mass destruction. They knew that everyone was used to joke. I used to hang out with all the journalists, and they'd say, well, "Of course." I mean, Al Qaeda is the opposite of the Ba'ath Party.
How far do you take the whole idea of conspiracy?
I don't know if it's
there's certainly a conspiracy. I don't know if it's a conspiracy. I think
yeah, for sure. But that's been admitted to now, and I think that the because of 9/11, the press got co-opted, and it became un-American to say anything bad about the government or the military, and I think that was one of the sort of turning points. A, because that's bullshit, and B, because young people got completely disenfranchised by news media because we saw it all happen. So we say, wait a minute, this doesn't sound right. And then afterwards, they're like, yeah, there was no weapons of mass destruction. Yeah, there was no Al-Qaeda here. And you're like, well, but we knew that. But we kept saying it. The news media became part of a government propaganda program, and everybody just went along with it. And that's fucking scary, because no matter who's in government, if they can just put together propaganda, how is that different than Nazi Germany? How is it that different than any of these totalitarian regimes where they say, yes, Kim Il-sung is God or whatever? Like, how is that any different? Because you can use the Fourth Estate as your PR agency.
Well, there was CIA had released some sort of a statement right after the war with Iraq had started that they were going to start releasing fake stories to throw off the enemy. And once you admit to doing something like that, that's an incredibly slippery ground. Like, that's the only way to defeat the enemy, is you have to put out fake stories and lie to everyone. And we're supposed to give you that power. Like, what kind of checks and balances are in place before that stuff gets distributed? What the fuck is going on here?
Well, it's also, Memorial Day, and you said it exactly right, is that, what are we doing sending, going in with, what's our mission to go into Afghanistan? What's our mission? Well, we have a mission with Al-Qaeda, Taliban. Okay, now we're letting Taliban in because, well, we've lost. We're saying, okay, well, we have to have power sharing with them. And so you say, well, and everybody knows it's going to go right back to civil war. So you're like, well, why did we come here? Why did we do all this? Why, like, what the fuck?
So you don't think that it's some sort of a grand conspiracy to extract minerals and all that stuff? You think it's much more of a clusterfuck shit decision by government and then being in place because of momentum and because of the fact there's contractors and they all want to keep getting paid and they
resource wealth for sure. And it was the story that, that, you know, we broke in Sudan that time, you know, Darfur is oil. And resource wealth, you know, we did it in the Congo. We've done it in a lot of stories all over the place. I wouldn't say, I would say they got caught in the quagmire of Afghanistan, much like the Soviets did. They went in there, they were trying to do something, and they just got sucked in, and then it got worse and worse and worse and worse and worse. And look, it got so, it's so bad on every level. I mean, America's in there trying to fight this war on drugs, war on drugs, war on drugs. They've been in there 12 years. There's never been more heroin for cheaper or higher quality ever. In fact, it's so good that they put the Golden Triangle out of business. It's all coming from Afghanistan now. And so America's the biggest drug dealer in the world because we're just sitting there running this country that just ships out all the heroin in the world.
How much of a piece does the CIA have of that?
Who knows? Well, I would say that, you know, look, it's been documented that they were part of the original outflux into America from Vietnam during the Vietnam War as a way to keep urban populations sort of at bay. That's well documented.
That was like a real social experiment? They would bring heroin into the ghetto to really.
Well, that's well documented. Yeah,
but is it well documented the intentions?
Yeah, because there was civil unrest in the major urban center, so they allowed heroin to go in because it took away all sort of, well, everything except for heroin addiction.
Yeah.
So I mean, if it's been a part of their policy in the past, obviously they're going to be incredibly sensitive to it. But I don't think that you can say that they're not involved, or at least the State Department's not involved, because the statistics speak for themselves. There's two times more, so by a factor of two, so 100% more heroin addiction, heroin addicts in America since the start of the Afghani war. Heroin's never been cheaper. It's never been better quality. And we've been running it. So, like, it's just flooding out. It's destroyed the, you know, Russia has now got 7%. In Pakistan, which is a, you know, Muslim country, extremist Muslim country, has something like 12% in Karachi, anyway, heroin addiction. And it's just, it's flooding out of Afghanistan. And that's, we could have gone in and taken all the fields that we didn't.
Well, not only did we not take the fields out, we guarded them.
Sure, yeah, yeah, definitely.
Most people want to come up with some sort of crazy explanation or excuse for why they did that.
Well, it's because they fear that they're going to, it's the only way they're really making money. They're making money two ways, which is the American government and heroin. And so they're like, well, if we take away heroin production, then they're really going to hate us.
Does any of that stuff make its way into pharmaceutical grade opiates like oxycodone, things along those lines?
Who knows? I don't know. All I know is, like, every time we do a story on the heroin situation in Afghanistan is fucking shocking, because you're just like, the Americans let them. There's actually, you know, pictures of American troops guarding poppy.
Jeez, this is fucking crazy.
It's nuts.
Well, it's the war on drugs, sort of, except over there. Over there, we're a war against the war on drugs.
Well, if you see the war on drugs in Afghanistan, and then you see the war on drugs in Mexico,
yeah,
you're like, well, it's completely corrupt from start to finish. There's this war on drugs is complete horseshit.
What's the craziest slippery war ever? When you the war on drugs, and then you have armed soldiers guarding poppy fields.
Sure.
What side are you on in this war on drugs? Because it seems like you're on the pro-drug side.
Right.
You're guarding the drugs. Like, how could you have a war on drugs when you're guarding the drugs?
And you're sending all the weapons to Mexico that they need. And all the money.
Yeah. And you don't even go to jail for it.
No.
And 90, what was the amount? 90% plus of the heroin comes out of Afghanistan.
Yeah.
And what did you say about how much has the percentage of it increased since we have occupied Afghanistan?
Just in America, it's doubled. But that's just in America. But in Russia, it's gone through the roof. It's doubled in the UK. But Russia and Pakistan and the Middle East, countries like Iran, everywhere on the path has just, heroin addictions has soared. In fact, heroin addiction is so huge in Russia. Did you see the thing we did on crocodile?
Holy fuck, man!
So they're so addicted. Ugh. They're so addicted to heroin that if they, like, when they can't get it, or because it got expensive now, because so many people are buying it, that they make their own synthetic heroin. And it's called Crocodile because it makes you look like a crocodile because it makes your skin like scales, and then the scales fall off and you just have like bone there.
It's insane. If you haven't seen it, if you haven't seen the images online of people that are addicted that have that, it's incredible. It's so frightening.
It's frightening.
It's so frightening that people would do that to themselves.
I'm going to literally shoot drugs that make my skin rot and fall off the bone.
He's not exaggerating. There's like people with big, their arms have like big gaping holes.
You see the bone.
Yeah. You see the bone. And they can walk around. They're not even infected.
Well, some of it, yeah.
Some of them get infected. It was weird. It looked like it was burnt off. Like it was like
because
fused.
It kills all the flesh and it falls
Jesus
off.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
That's insane. Yeah. And what happens then? They just die. I mean, you can't just have your bones just exposed like that, right? Does it ever fill up if you quit?
You know, I don't know the answer to that.
Does anybody ever get off that shit?
It's even more addictive than heroin.
Christ.
Yeah.
You guys had that shit about the Colombian drug that you blow in people's faces.
Scopolamine.
Yeah, that is terrifying.
Well, the freaky thing about scopolamine is you don't believe it's true until you see it. Because the stories are, it's the zombie drug, right? And it's, we heard stories of, you know, people coming into their apartments on the security cameras and like clearing out their whole apartments, and you see them on security cams doing it, you know, and they don't have any recollection. They wake up in the morning, their bank accounts are drained, et cetera, et cetera. And they couldn't figure it out until the FARC, the guys who were Colombians who were making cocaine, were using the same process to refine Burundanga flowers to make scopolamine. And what was happening was, generally, it started out as hookers, and hookers would put a condom inside their mouth like this so it wouldn't go down, and then they put a little scopolamine in their lips, and then when they go to, like, kiss you or whatever, they go, pfft, and they would spit the scopolamine in, and you inhale it, and then you go into,
holy shit, that's scary.
And then you go into this trance-like state, and then it's auto-suggestion. So you say, okay, we're going to go now to your apartment. Yes. And we're going to go to the apartment. And then we're going to clean out all your shit. And we're going to go to your bank. And we're going to... And they have security footage of them going to the bank and signing shit. And it's not like one or two people. This is like... happens all the fucking time.
Oh, my God.
And so that's a fucking terrifying drug. Terrifying drug. Because you're just gone. You're in a sort of zombie-like narcotic state, and you just do what people tell you to do.
That's the real ultimate date rape drug.
No.
Yeah.
That's the real shit. We got to make sure people don't get a hold of that
stuff.
That's
a life rape drug.
Can you imagine dating one of those girls?
Oh, my God. Someone spits something in your mouth and makes you be their zombie.
Those girls have to be undateable. There's no way you can date that guy.
What, a girl that would do that to somebody?
Yeah, like if you knew that's what she did as a job, and you ever got in a fight with
her,
she probably had all
hooker.
These tricks.
Said she was a hooker.
I know. Imagine dating one of those hooker girls.
So. Yeah, you shouldn't date hookers. That's just me. I'm silly, though.
Especially ones that take over your brains.
Yeah.
Well, I'm so terrified of shit like that. Why would that exist? Why would there be something that allows you to be turned into a fucking zombie to someone else's suggestions like that? You know, when you see the different things in nature, like different parasites that control different organisms and make them do fucked up things, it really is kind of bizarre when you stop and think about it. Like, what kind of a system, what kind of a world do we live in where there's that laying around, a plant that grows, and if it gets into your body, people just order you around. You don't have it. That's crazy.
Yes.
You become a fucking robot. You become an automated little slave for them.
Drugs are crazy. We just did a story on, you probably know a lot more about it than I do, but Ibogaine.
Yeah.
And we were doing a story on the underground heroin clinics where, you know, people, like, it's actually started by a lot of ex-junkies who were, like, 40-year junkies, like, couldn't get off, tried, you know, hundreds of times to get clean, and they would do Ibogaine, and then it interrupts your addiction, you know, for like 2 weeks or whatever. So it's long enough that you sort of get a, you know, you don't have to go cold turkey. And so we went to these clinics where they administer Ibogaine and stuff. And it was fucking fascinating. It was crazy.
Did you do it?
No, because I saw them do it. And it's, they were taking massive doses though. They're taking like, it's 48 hours, lots of vomiting, like crazy fucking.
I have a couple
gym.
Of friends that have done it. One that did it recently, and one that it changed his whole life. I have a buddy of mine. He got his back got injured, right. got hooked on painkillers,
right.
pain pills. Started taking, you know, you name them. He was taking them and couldn't get off them. It was ruining his life. Mm. Goes down, gets an ibogaine, boom, clean, 100%. Yeah. Now brings people down there. Started his own center down there.
Yeah.
Brings people down there. To introduce them to Mexico. Yeah, yeah. But I'm like, fucking Mexico, man. Mexico's scary as fuck.
Well, it's because it's still legal there. It's illegal here. It's a Schedule I drug just like heroin.
Yeah. Well, everything in Mexico is decriminalized now, yeah. right? They most people don't know.
Yeah,
Didn't they decriminalize acid, mushrooms, yeah. pot, coke,
yeah.
everything?
Yeah.
And this is to fight the cartels.
Exactly. But yeah, ibogaine, that's the strongest drug I've ever seen. Like, because people under it were like, holy fuck.
Yeah, my business partner did it, changed his life.
Yeah.
Well, he's just done it a couple times. He's done a couple different things rather than change his life. He's done ayahuasca,
yeah.
done, you know, ibogaine. He's really into going to these weird places and going on big trips.
But the ibogaine is interesting because we followed, you know, some junkie straight through the whole process. And it was pretty remarkable because it worked. Like,
yeah.
It was nuts.
Yeah, Aubrey, my friend who's done it, he, you know, he described the process, and I didn't want to do it even slightly.
Yeah,
it sounded like hell.
It's hell. Yeah,
yeah. Like, you know, you can talk me into doing some DMT. Maybe it's 15 minutes. You know?
I'll send you the piece. There's so much vomiting; it's fucking crazy. Days of vomiting.
It cannot be good for you.
Well, you gotta think though, man. If someone's hooked on heroin, anything, they'll take anything to get them out of that. I've watched people slip into addiction several times in my life, and it's just like being turned by a vampire. Mm-hmm. It really is. It's a feeling that you've lost someone. They're slipping away. They're slipping away from themselves, from their family, from everybody. They're slipping away because of a compound, some sort of a chemical. It's really what a bizarre thing that we have, this addiction quality. You know,
well, we say that in the piece. We say that this mother gives her son to these sort of New York fruitcakes, nice guys, but like weird guys who do sort of West African voodoo. You know, when they administer the ibogaine, and we were taking her son to Mexico to one of these clinics because we couldn't legally do it in America, so we brought the whole crew down to Mexico to shoot it. And it was like, how bad is heroin that a mother is going to give her son to these, you know, crazy West African voodoo ex-junkie dudes to take off to Mexico and administer the strongest drug in the world to, so he's going to puke and fucking go nuts for 2 days.
Wow.
That's how bad heroin is.
And that's what the government sells. Da-da-da-da-da.
Dang!
America.
Fuck yeah.
Listen, man, let's wrap this up and let you get some sleep.
All right.
You're the fucking man, dude. Anytime you want to do this, anytime you're in town, you got an open invite. We'll open this bitch up at 4 o'clock in the morning for you. Whatever you want, man.
Thank you, man.
You're fucking awesome. Continued safety and success in your travels.
Thanks.
And thanks for illuminating giant parts of the world that I personally wouldn't have been aware of if it wasn't for you and what you guys are doing. You're fucking awesome, man.
Thanks, buddy.
Good seeing you. All right, my friends, thank you everyone for tuning in. This week we got tomorrow Mike Dolce, famed MMA nutritionist. He's going to come in. And then Wednesday, Bobcat Goldthwait is coming in.
Yee.
So we got a fun, packed date. Follow Shane on Twitter. It's ShaneSmith30 on Twitter. And thank you to The Fleshlight for tuning into our podcast. If you go to JoeRogan.net, click on the link for The Fleshlight, enter in the code name Rogan, and you'll save yourself 15% off. Thanks to Onnit.com. All the other stuff, O-N-N-I-T.com. The other stuff that we've been talking about, kettlebells, it's all coming soon. The hemp protein, which is fucking delicious. That stuff's so good, and it doesn't fuck with me as much as whey does. Hemp protein is delicious, and the stuff we have is maca in it, raw cocoa, and it's sweetened by stevia, so it's really healthy for you. And it's the best tasting shit. I'm telling you, it's like my favorite all time protein powder. That's coming out soon too. Go to Onnit.com, enter in the code name Rogan, save yourself 10% off any and all orders, and any bottle of 30 pills that you buy, no matter what it is, you have a 100% money back guarantee on the first order. You do not even have to return the product. You just say this stuff sucks and you get 100% of your money back. The reason why we're telling you that, the reason why we give it to you that way, is because these are all good products. They're solid. They're based on strong, sound knowledge of nutrition, and I believe in them 100%. Use the code name Rogan, save yourself 10% off, and we'll see you dirty bitches tomorrow. Thanks for everything. We love you guys.